Okay. The Board of Education meeting will now come to order. Board Member Dan Smith Jr. is not able to attend the meeting in person due to an employment-related obligation. In accordance with District 41 policy, Mr. Smith notified the superintendent's office that he would not be physically present for the board meeting, but would like to participate in the meeting by phone. May I have a motion to approve Mr. Smith's participation by phone in tonight's meeting?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Powers? Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood? Mr. Vondrack?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes, here. All right, board candidate orientation.
Let me try and get a hold of him. See if he
does he want to try him?
I just thought I would try him.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay. Sorry, Jerry.
Thank you for calling the Radisson Hotel, Corning, New York. You may press zero at any time. Good evening, Radisson Front Desk. This is Dan. How can I help you?
Hi. I'm wondering if you could direct me to Mr. Dan Smith's room, please.
Certainly. One moment. Let me pull it up. It would be my pleasure to connect you. One moment.
Thank you.
At Club Carlton.
Hey, this is Dan.
Hi, Dan. You were there. Great. We're so glad you can join us. You are on speaker now, and we're ready to begin the meeting with the candidates' conversation.
I'm just going to hand out a couple things and then sit down, and we're going to turn it over to... Oh, with Dan.
Oh, with Dan, that was right. We'll get it together.
Thanks, Brian.
Welcome, Dan. Roll call, please.
Mr. Vondrack?
Here.
Mrs. Powers?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood? Mrs. Nelson?
Here. Now, so I just have a few things to hand out.
Why don't we grab them?
Yeah, really. I have one announcement. Go ahead and grab them, and I'll tell you guys what they are. At one for each of you, and then this is take one of those two. This is from our general counsel, Franzik and Radelet. They put out this really nice book this last spring. It was the first time that I recall getting it. And it's a really nice, as it says, basics for school board members. And I've actually referred to it a few times this year, so it's just good stuff. It's kind of like a dictionary of terms and actions and things like that. And then the other thing is something that Sam and Dan and Ann and I went to the last IASB dinner, which is the one coming up in March. We went to the one this last fall. And they, for the first time, had these nice kind of file folder tools, which list on the front the mandatory board training that will be coming up. We all had to do Open Meetings Act training, but there's two additional trainings for board members starting in 2013, and they're listed on the front of that file folder. And we can go over that. And then there's some information on the back. So just a good kind of summary tool for that. Inside is, I think, the IASB Constitution and Position Statements as a handout. And then there were two other handouts, too. One that, Patrick, you're holding it on your left hand, that board and administrator. You'll be getting those on a monthly basis we get those. And they're done in a blue ink, so when you see them, they'll be in color. And those are just a one-page, just a good reminder on particular issues, whether it's around open meetings issues or this one is about, you know, hiring practices, who hires employees, role of the board, role of administration. So they're good, reminders, I guess, of board responsibility and relationship. And then the other is an article that came out of one of the journals about being a first-time board member that I think it's more of a like an opinion piece by this guy, Mark, whatever his last name is. And I thought it was was a good timing for us and for you guys and just a good reminder of what that first experience is. So just some takeaways for tonight. And then at the PTA council meeting this morning, Lisa Lane, who's co-chair for Legislation Committee, talked about pulling together a candidate forum It was going to be in concert with a legislative forum, but Sandra P. Host and a couple of the other folks aren't able to make it at the date, or we can't do it before elections, and so we want to have a forum for board candidates along with Drew as an incumbent for PTAs and community members, et cetera. So she's got a date on hold and asked me to give that to you guys tonight. It's March 7th. It's a Thursday, and it would be at 7 o'clock at Hadley. So she's got a room over there. I don't know if it's the library.
My library.
Probably is. But March 7th, 7 o'clock. So you can get back to me and let me know if that works for you. And if it doesn't, you know, if it does, I'll let Lisa know. And then she can move ahead, and then she'll just contact you guys directly. And then if not,
does it work for you, Dean?
Yeah. Does that work on your calendar? You can look on your calendar, let me know, yeah. And then we'll see. And Drew, you can check, too, to see if the 7th works for you as well. Yeah, it's a Thursday night. So, you know, like 7 to, I don't know, 8:30 probably at the most. Just an opportunity for people to come and get to meet you.
And I think even though it's an uncontested election, what the goal will probably be is just to hear, you know, from you what kinds of things are important to you as you take on board membership. What are not burning issues, but what are the, you know, what were the motivators? What are the things that are important to you as you serve? So it won't be in a, you know, kind of a challenging environment. I don't think. I think it'll.
It won't be.
It could be. I suppose if something was to challenge you, but
that's
you won't
a week
be.
After you, yeah, or right. 2 weeks after you guys look at the think tank.
Correct. The recommendation will come. Yeah. So anyway, so that's Lisa Lane, and so let me know, and then I'll get back to her, and then she'll just correspond with you directly, and she'll be copying Maureen, so Maureen stays in the loop on this as well.
I think she's waiting for
confirmation.
Right. I sent her in my email that if we do a check-in tonight for availability, and I would get back to her.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. And Lisa's role with the district?
Yeah. Lisa is a parent who serves on PTA Council as the legislative chair.
So we wanted this to be relaxed, open conversation. I know that we have some prompts of our own in terms of to answer some questions around things that for us as individuals are kind of the best experience we've had with the board, maybe something that's been challenging or frustrating for us, and wanted to allow a conversation with you guys as well, any questions that you have as we get into this. So. If anybody wants to start us.
And I think we also want to know, I'm sorry, Erica, one of the things we want to know, you know, as we conclude tonight is what will be helpful to you next in terms of getting you ready for May and what other types of workshops, orientations. We know we typically want you to meet with staff and have a chance to learn a little bit about their work and their roles in the district. But there may be things that you just want to know. And Sam, I think Sam probably is... He has the greatest insight right now in terms of what he wishes he had learned right off the bat and didn't have to learn it on the run.
Yeah.
Like board election.
Yeah.
Board officer election.
Being a cast the first vote. For the first office.
Yeah, that seemed unfair.
Didn't it?
Come to think of it.
I should have. Actually, there you go. Parliamentary rules. You could learn that after you passed or abstained or something. If I would have known better.
Referred your vote.
For me, being the, I guess, the newest member, by far, to take a look at the policy manual, the online manual, and it's a huge thing, but just start reading it. And you know, pick out the things that are, and I can't, is it two? And like two is the school board, and one is the...
One is administration.
Administration, which is probably... So start at one and go to... And just keep going.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And to me, that opened a lot of... Opened my eyes to a lot of things that I didn't really know existed and didn't know the procedures existed as they did. So that helped me tremendously.
Is it a manual, policy manual to run the board?
No, to run the entire... It's the board's policy manual... that governs the entire district.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's based on Illinois State's dual school code.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Right. And other things.
Right.
Yeah. And it's on the website. It's easy to access, easy to read.
It has eight sections.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not as big as you
And it's searchable. So, I mean, you could even search topics that are of interest to you to start, you know, and then go.
If you're looking for something to help you fall asleep, yeah, that's the perfect thing to get you going.
Okay. Certain sections are more interesting than others, you know, if you have a specific field of interest.
And if you look at the student section, it will really give you a perception, a little bit of perspective of the mandates that govern the state of Illinois around curriculum and what we right, what we must do and how often we must do it and when and for whom. And
for me, I was very surprised at what not only our district, but every district has to do,
right,
has to fund. So you'll be surprised when you read those sections. The other thing for me was just to listen and ask questions in an informal setting of other board members. Just completely pick their brains. Don't be afraid to ask any question. I asked like a million, and by the way, a wealth of knowledge. So get to her while you can.
I'll be here in May. And I'll be available after.
Yeah, for me, any question is, no question is a dumb question, because I had a million dumb questions. But the more you ask, the more things sort of fit together and you kind of figure it out. And probably the last biggest thing is that I didn't know what I didn't know. And I'm sure I still don't know more than I know. So you have to just be a little bit humble in that and just accept that you're not going to know everything and just ask and find out.
Mm-hmm. What's been really rewarding for you since you've been a board member? I'm asking that because I'm interested.
It's really rewarding. Mostly to be part of the process, I think, and the knowledge gain, and to understand how things actually work, and to, it sounds a little funny, but to validate some ideas of some things and some people, like our staff and our teachers, you know. You hear all the creative this and that, you go, I don't know. Turns out they are. In my opinion. But you'll have to find it out for yourself. But I think that's the most rewarding thing for me, is the validation of the way the district is running and has run before. And you know, a lot of things that I heard were completely untrue. Some of them were a little true, some of them were true, but most of them were untrue. And I think you'll find that more to be true as you go along. Mm-hmm.
I can answer that question too. My, in terms of, for me, you know, the one thing that I really is kind of the warm fuzzy for me is graduation. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to that every year. It is to be able to hand the diplomas to the kids is really, really very rewarding. And again, it sounds a little corny, but
it's a visual
symbol.
I'm with you. It's
a visual.
It's my absolute favorite event that we do.
Yeah.
I challenge all of you not to be moved by that.
It's true. What about learning curve things to think about?
And I want to see you.
Yeah, go ahead.
In terms of time, I'll talk to you about time. When I got on the board, I had a certain preconceived notion of time. How long it was going to take for me to go through a board package, how long the meetings were going to be, how much preparation was really involved. And I will tell you, for me, as soon as I got on the board, I'm like, okay, it was double what I thought it was going to be. There's a lot of reading. There's a lot of knowledge from reading the board packages that you need to kind of try and understand and get it. You can't understand and know everything, but you can get a sense of different things and help you form an opinion on what you want to do in terms of votes. So I would also suggest that you read the board packages very carefully, very closely. A lot of a lot of questions that you'll find are explained in the board packages. So, I'm more of a tactile guy. I like to print my board packet and hold it in my hand and read it like the Sunday paper. That's just me. There are other people that are more techie that enjoy reading it on the screen. But take specific care into reading the board packages and just being prepared.
Can I ask a question about the board?
Yeah, sure.
When do you guys normally get those? And supposing it's a couple of days prior, but when is it?
They go out on Thursdays.
They go out on Thursdays for the Monday. Mm-hmm. And is staff available to answer questions?
Of course. Mm-hmm. Up to
24/7?
Well, we'd like to say up till noon of the day of the board meeting, but it's usually up till 6:30.
We prefer not to have that be the norm.
We try not to.
The mantra is always no surprises. So if you get your board packet, I mean, obviously the hope is most of us probably have a tendency to open it up and see what the big highlights are. Anne's always done a letter to us or just a little brief memo giving us any highlights, anything she wants to draw our attention to. So at least we know to go directly there. But to really get into them, it sometimes takes a little time. Yeah, I mean, it does. And but we've always been really fortunate. Staff's always been very kind about asking, you know, making themselves available to ask questions. And if they, obviously, they have a life, hopefully, that, you know, they may not get back to us till Monday, and that's okay. But the point is to not show up at the board meeting and ask some, you know, question out of left field that they don't, you know, haven't had time to give you a proper response, especially in a public forum. You want to make sure that they've had enough time. And if it's a personnel question, you're not really going to ask that kind of a question publicly. You might go through Ann.
So we're able to reach out directly to Sarah.
I don't want to say yes, we do, because we always copy. We always go to Ann and ask the question.
It kind of depends. You know, typically in an email, you would email that person and copy me.
Okay.
And if you forget to do that, then that person will copy me on the reply, just as a way of reminding you. And then the reason for that is simply that, you know, it's sort of a line of communication to make sure that I'm aware of what I may need to be looking at deeper than that particular question. So if you were to make a phone call, probably you'd call me.
Yeah.
Or you'd call the superintendent, so that then we can either answer it, or I'll say, you know what, I'll have Bob call you as soon as he is available to do so.
Mm-hmm. On that note, I know that there's an Open Meetings Act. And mm-hmm. I don't understand it yet, but
it's the law of the land.
It's in the Franzic book.
Okay. So when do you guys discuss things? Because it isn't in an open meeting, and it seems as though you get all this stuff individually. When do you talk about that?
Well, board members do talk about it in open session, and you're right in that it's challenging on some things, because there are many things I would like to just talk to the board about, but I don't want to talk to them in closed session or open session about. And so I'll either have to do it via my communications with the board packet. As Sarah said, I may highlight something that either I think is not problematic, but maybe something I want them to think more deeply about, you know, that it's a more complicated issue, and so I'll give them, you know, some perspective on that that I have, because I feel like that's my job. And then board members can talk to one another individually. So, you know, you can give Joe a call and, you know, say, here's, I'm struggling with this, I'm thinking this, you know. I always encourage you to talk to me as well, because, you know, we need to know and understand one another. But you can't talk to three board members at once, either in an email communication or in a phone conference or out the local watering hole.
And you can't make a decision.
And you can't make any decision.
You know, I'll talk mm-hmm. to you when you go to, you know, ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah, those are, and have those things been done? Certainly they have. Would we call them ethical? No, we wouldn't. So the board really is charged to have its discussions about those things which they will take action on in the public body.
But I would say most issues, you know, take a few meetings to work through the system. You're not going to be sprung something on Thursday that's going to be very controversial that you know, I don't have time to talk to everyone about, because you generally have a finance meeting, you talk about financial issues, then 2 weeks later it comes to the board for just discussion, and then 2 weeks later it comes for a vote. So the general public says, oh, the board just rubber stamps everything. Well, generally, by the time you vote on it, things have been worked out. So it seems that way, but...
You know, and there are times when we have had a topic that, following that three-step process, finance, discussion, action, isn't enough. And we have to have it, you know, it just keeps kind of coming back to discussion until board members either are comfortable or we realize administratively there's no support or not enough support and we withdraw. You know, we typically don't want to see an action voted down. That doesn't do much for our relationship, and it doesn't do much for the organization as a whole. You know, if we're not in agreement with the board, if the administration and the board aren't in agreement, we're gonna work through it until we can either be in agreement or we know look in a different direction.
And I mean, and like any professional, you're going to take a second sometimes when you hear a board member say something or take a position on an item that you either don't agree with, or more importantly, you might not understand where they're coming from. There may be something going on, or they might have a perspective that they're not comfortable sharing so publicly, and that's, you know, that's where our professional responsibility comes in, to pick up the phone and call and say, okay, did I hear you correctly, or, you know, you seem to be very passionate about this topic. What's up? Are we both on the same page? I mean, it's okay to disagree. People disagree. They should disagree, as long as they do it respectfully. And oftentimes decisions are made and, you know, people vote yes on something, and they come at it from many different angles. And I think that's, from a professional standpoint, you know, you take the time to reach out and call somebody.
You know, Dean, the other place we have discussions, you know, I think when you said you certainly don't discuss in public, these are business discussions that we have at board meetings, and so there's a lot of information that board members already have. Where the more dialogue-type discussions occur are in workshops, and those are usually special meetings, like retreats, or we try to do an annual meeting with full board around our budget preparation process that, you know, allows us to be a little bit more informal and just talk through the big ideas that we have for the budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, meetings would go on forever if you just had open discussion.
Oh, yeah.
And that's part of it. And part of this, too, you know, when Tara talks to you, that's one thing when we talk about something you don't like, because I never quite understood when you get to a point where there's one person that disagrees versus the two. Is it more on that one person to state their case and move on? Or sometimes we get into where we spend an hour with five people or six people trying to convince that one person why they don't agree with them, and it's kind of like, okay, it's not going to change. Let's just agree to disagree and move on, you know?
But board votes are unilateral.
No, they're not. And that's where, but sometimes you feel like you're like, I want to really make sure you fully understand why, you know, this, I feel this way or this way. But sometimes it seems like we get caught in five or six people trying to talk to one person to try to change their mind, and it's not going to happen.
And
the long run doesn't make any difference.
Right. And at the end of the day, whatever the decision is, wherever you fell and, you know, in that decision, a decision is made and everybody has to move forward with it. So whether they agree or they don't, that's the position the district is taking on whatever the issue is, and everybody has to keep moving forward. You know, we don't sandbag something that we didn't agree with in the background.
Then don't take things like that personally.
Yeah, it's not personal.
You're here for the district and the children that we're trying to educate. Just think of it that way.
See, the optimistic view of that is that I think the board tries to, board members, this board in particular, has tried to be sensitive to the fact that somebody might be pretty significantly against something and why. And I do think we get on a hamster wheel wanting to figure out what that is. And so you're trying to find this balance between saying, okay, thanks, move on, which seems a little pejorative, versus too long, and we get it, la, 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 let's move on. So it's this balancing act. I think the other piece of it is, in terms of information, is that, just went out of my head.
Sure,
it'll come back. Some of the business decisions we've been making over this last year and a half, especially the last two, 3 years, has really been based on a document that we are all very familiar with, should be very familiar with, which is the long-range plan. And as any company has, if you, when you have your strategic plan, those actions that are aligned to those goals is what we should all expect seeing. And one of the changes in the last couple of years under Ann's leadership, and I have to give some credit to Steve Von Dreck when he was on Finance Committee as well a couple of years ago prior to this stint, is that the recommendations that we get in terms of information in the board packet list specifically the goal from the long-range plan, what that aligns to, and then the information, and then it gives you the data. And so that is just a great reminder of us rolling back to what's the baseline for this, which for me is really important. If you can align it back to the strategy, then you know your, you know what makes sense or what's out of left field, which there isn't anything because it's all connected to the plan. So it's a good question.
Hey, Dan?
Yes.
Is there anything that you would like to talk about in terms of board membership and either advice or what's been important to you?
No, the only thing I was thinking is we should have had that video, a DVD release.
Okay, you're done.
Should include that in every candidate packet for now.
We still have that video. Is that the one where they interviewed all the past or current board members, IASB?
Yeah, it's where they're all like, oh, man, it takes forever, all your life.
Yeah. It's a very discouraging video. Okay.
I don't think they meant it to be that way, but
you and Dan and...
It was
at Churchill, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was at Churchill.
Yeah.
And it was kind of depressing.
That might have been a good video before we turned it in.
Yeah. How about before we actually
running a loop? We're looking for good people to be board members.
Yeah, probably not important.
I was worried when you put daunting in your email.
I mean, otherwise, I think like what Sam said, reading through the policy. You know, I served on the policy committee in my first 2 years, and I think it's one of the three cornerstones that the board work is. You know, it's setting the policy for the district. The superintendent, and then I think apparently the other one is if it was curriculum or whatnot. But that policy is one of those big three things out there, so it is important to know that and understand that. That'll really give you a leg up on everything.
Connecting with the community.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then just going through old notes. Probably the highlights would be the best thing. The e-blast that comes out, and then if there's anything in particular from recently that you're interested in, maybe digging into those board notes and reading up on those just to see what get up to speed on some of the issues out there.
Mm-hmm. Anything you'll miss, Dan, as you roll off the board?
Dan, keep it clean. Dan, keep it clean. We're at school here.
Much time to be here?
Oh, that's nice. I'm going to take that positively.
I'll miss, meetings that go till 11:30.
Or later.
I think like Drew said, like that graduation, that's kind of like the payoff of why you're in it, is to see, those kids graduating and getting on. And, that first one you do, I think you're, sworn in May, and then like 3 weeks later you're at the graduation, and you really don't know what the heck is going on. But I was kind of depressed thinking about that. I'm like, oh man, I'm not going to be able to be at the graduation this year.
We'll save you, Steve.
You could be at graduation, you just don't get to sit up on the stage.
Yeah.
I have to say, if a graduation does not come to me. You don't know, there's three types of school districts in Illinois. There's unit districts, which are K-12, there's high school only districts like Lombard, and then most unit districts don't have 8th grade graduation.
Well, they'll have an
or they have like an afternoon, right, which I think would be great. Yeah. But, the big get dressed up and all that. Yeah, save it for high school.
Well, I went to a unit school district, K-8, and I remember we had a graduation and some kid had a limo pull up. I guess each their own. But as Drew had already said, you learn a lot about what goes on behind the scenes and not just seeing the surface of the day-to-day with your interaction you may have at your local school, but kind of getting a peek behind the curtain to see all the mechanisms and the machine, the well-oiled machine that keeps things on the district.
Yeah. Well, I think that's my observation is that each of these board members have always conducted themselves as learners and have wanted to know more, have done the inquiry as Sam was talking about, have called me or called each other to say, you know, I don't even get why schools do this, because we are a different animal. You know, you mean if you come from a business background or a world that's not a profit kind of empire or something, but rather than we are not for profit, we are. Our commodity is learning, and it's different. There are a lot of things that don't operate in the same manner as they would in the business world. And this board has continually sought to be a learner about that, and I think that it has made us strong as a team. And you know, we learn from each other. You know, obviously, we learn a great deal administratively by the perspective and the expertise the board members bring to us. And so, viewing ourselves as a team, even at some of our most challenging moments, is really important because, you know, we share this very singular goal to provide the best education we can for our children within the resources that we have. And, you know, that's pretty focused. And it's a little different than, you know, what you might see in another organization where other factors may drive the goals.
I want to add one other piece. The cabinet that's made up of the key staff that work directly with Ann is our Director of Human Resources, Roy Campbell, who's here, back here in the corner in the purple sweater. Bob Cicerella, that I think most of you have met or seen, our Assistant Superintendent for Finance and Facilities. Karen Carlson, our Assistant Superintendent for Teaching, Learning, and Accountability. Julie Worthen, our Director of Communication and Grants. And Mike Wood, who's over in the corner, our Director of Technology. But I also want to point out Phyllis Hanna, who is sitting right behind us as well. Phyllis is retiring this year. I say it with like angst. A brain trust of information, and of course she's laughing. but I know that Bob already has transition plans in place for that and for all of the work that she does, but that will be a lot of institutional knowledge that we'll need to assume as well. And then Maureen Stecker, who you all know, who is the executive assistant to the superintendent, who, without whom I think the board would not are those key contributors in terms of leadership and identifying needs, et cetera, and also the coordination around our staff as well. So those are also key partners in the district and really important.
No disrespect to the board members, but we turn every 4 years, 6 years, 8 years. We have partners here that's been here a long time. Right. I'd like to ask them a question.
Sure, go right ahead.
You guys have seen a lot of faces around these computers and typewriters probably back in the day, but you know, what's the quality that you want to see in a board member? I mean, you've seen them come and go, and what's the best quality or the quality you want to see in a board member?
Come on, jump in, anybody.
I'll go. over my tenure, I think it's a board member who can come to the table, see the big picture, and understand that it isn't a single agenda that they should be sitting at the table for. It is big picture, it is the community, it's the students of the community, and there are some very valuable assets in this community called your children and the school, and it's looking out for those assets. And so coming to the table, willing to discuss, review, question, and move the institution forward. And looking always at the bigger picture, not a single focus, is what I look to be, what I have found to be a very good board member. They can see the forest for the trees, and they can have those kind of conversations to agree to disagree, but then move the institution forward.
Karen, you were going to say something too.
Thank you, Phyllis.
A little bit shorter there. And for me, it's been their commitment to be a learner and wanting to really understand what it is we're trying to do on behalf of our kids and that they want what's best for students. And I, you know, I don't have as much tenure as Phyllis does, but that's been very apparent that they're always interested in trying to understand and see those connections and asking those questions.
Mm-hmm.
They do work. You know, how can we continue to be a growing organization?
And if something doesn't make sense, just ask them. And we'll explain why we're thinking what we're thinking, and maybe you'll shed some new light on it that we hadn't thought about before, but just keeping those open communications and that relationship is very important. Yes.
And we bring recommendations to you folks. As Steve said, he starts at the Finance Committee, but really his recommendations probably started months before. And it's not like they just come to you at a Finance Meeting. You're going to hear them for weeks, if not months on end, prior to them even coming to you for an initial review. So come to the table with an open mind and be willing to ask good questions and make the right, make a good decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Improve our thinking. Which is what I think board members have done.
I can't answer that. I would just say one thing is, you know, being a learner, because people come with their own ideas, their certificates, but the fact is all that you can do if you are open minded and can see that, you know, there's new information or different information to be put into the mix.
Mike, any question? Someone who can talk tech?
Yeah, somebody
that can bring you
a laptop.
Thank you, Mike.
You guys all get laptops.
These are two districts.
I always bring my own.
Gotcha. That's
because,
why you look still.
Yes, I always look.
If you have your own, you can.
It's like my extension of my person, so I prefer to do my own thing. And since I'm the board secretary, I can type my notes and send them off to Maureen immediately so she doesn't have to wait for them. I just wanted to offer just a few pearls of wisdom. Ha ha ha, I'm kidding.
You're longest-serving.
I know. As the longest-serving board member, I thought I'd put some of these things a little bit in perspective. I've served with over 14 different people on this board over 8 years and 2 superintendents. I'll be the first to admit that I came on the board, I ran for the board with sort of an axe to grind. And within the first, 6 weeks, I would say I had a huge wake-up call and a cold water in the face sense of reality, because it really is not what you think it is until you get there. And I think it's often... it's easy to sit in the audience and make assumptions about what's going on, but until you're actually doing the work and living and breathing it, you can't fully appreciate and understand it. And it takes us all a long time to get there, and everybody has their little epiphany at different times. But a couple of them that I've had over my years first of all, we have an incredible staff. We have an incredible administrative team. And the teachers in our building are amazing. And we often, as parents and as community members, don't show them that respect because we assume we know more than they do. Yet none of us are educators. So, we all go out and we go to parties and we hear things about this teacher and that teacher. And I just, you know, want to remind you that they're teachers, they are people, and that they are staff, and they are in front of our kids each and every day. And none of us want to do that job. So, you know, please show them the respect that they have utterly, they deserve and they've earned. Because if it wasn't for them, we'd all be out of a job. That said, our perception is not the reality. And we often have people perceive what's going on here, and that's not the reality. So asking questions is the best way to find answers. Asking one another questions, asking, you know, our staff through the superintendent questions if something doesn't make sense, because often they're going to give you an answer and it makes a lot more sense. When we're privy to a lot of information that the public not that they're not privy to, but they don't live and breathe it the way that you will. So even this think tank as an example, we're living and breathing it a lot longer. Even though the information has been out there just as long, we've been dealing with it. So it kind of comes as second nature, and we understand it a little bit differently than others do. But again, just ask the questions. Two more things. One, visit the other schools, because we've all had kids at specific schools. So that's our frame of reference. I mean, and until you get to Hadley, you don't know what Hadley's like either. And when I first started on the board, I had a kindergarten, a first grader, and a preschooler. So, and now I have somebody in high school. So I now can say I've seen it all. And it's important, because our frame of reference is the little building where our children have attended school. And there's every one of those buildings has its own face and unique personality. So I encourage you to get in those buildings. Just walk around. Go to an event that they have just to see the faces, just to kind of get a sense of what it's all about. My hope is that the board, like every 2 years when we have new boards come in the fall, we've done building tours. And it's nice because you kind of see the ins and outs of buildings, and you walk around with the building principals, and you get to see what are some of the things that have worked really well and what some of those needs are. That gives you a different appreciation for what our buildings are like. And finally, it is often one of the most difficult things to overcome is to not take this stuff personally. I'm sure that all of us at different times have gone home and cried, I can't read the message board because of the hateful things that have been said about me and my family over the years. Elections, you guys are really lucky that this is not contested, because it's not pretty. People make it personal, and yet we're all here to do what's best for kids. No one would give up how many hours, thousands of hours of their time. Oops. If they weren't here to do what's best
okay,
for kids.
Okay, you can survive it.
8 years. I got a lot more hours then. But at the end of the day, it is about humor. Because if you cannot laugh, you cannot get through the day. And for some of us who like to have rose-colored glasses or have often been had difficulty with eye contact, it allows us to just smile and get through it and think the things that we want to think and yet be respectful. So.
Pearls of wisdom.
From the pro.
Yeah.
And I think that's
scary looking.
The rest of the meeting.
Dan, you didn't get to see the visual on that, but there was a final salvo from
Well, we can take a picture
Pearls
of
wisdom.
And I can show you.
Yeah.
I would second the building to us, because those were very important to me.
Yeah.
And with the principals as well, because they know the buildings, they know where to take you, know what to show you, so.
We'll set those up.
Do we still get the D87 activities card? That might be a bonus.
Oh yes, that's a perk. Right.
That's
we
a perk
usually
too.
Get every year. You get a pass for two to all District 87 activities. So you have a chance to go see football games, plays, and all kinds of activities there as a partner.
Gymnastics are going to state, aren't there? No, region. No.
It doesn't count for playoffs, I found that out.
That's right.
Yeah, the hard way.
It doesn't count in any districts that way.
Well, the boosters don't either. IHSA wants that.
Any?
Oops,
sorry.
Can
we ask
a
question?
Yeah, we have to start.
PTA meetings and stuff like that. Do you guys interact at meetings with them?
Yeah, we're board representatives to all of the PTAs, as well as our what used to be called CERC, but it's the Special Education Parent Support Group. Mm-hmm. And so we attend those meetings. I'm the rep for that this next couple months. In addition to PTA Council, which happens on once a month on a Monday morning, it was this morning before the board meeting, and that's all of the PTA presidents, their reps, as well as school reps, as well as PTA Council committees. So that's legislation like we talked about with Lisa Lane and Margaret and safety, reflections, all these different programs. So that's a very good set of meetings to go to, because you get kind of a bird's eye view of all that goes on in the district with the volunteer.
Yes,
we set a rotation.
Okay.
3 months.
You're assigned a building for 3 months, and then it rotates.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll fill you in on that. But we will be preparing a more structured orientation, of course, once the election is over, and be able to meet with staff and, you know, and with, of course.
And we can even do some of that before the election. I mean, that's not definitive in terms of a timeline. And so if you would like to set up time, it's often easiest if we do it together. Like if you're interested in meeting with staff, that we would either set up a rotation for the three of you to meet with individual members, or we would sit together with you as a cabinet team and just talk and let people talk about their particular roles, and you can ask questions, whatever feels, you know, good for you. So if you want to email me some of your thoughts about internal needs, what you might want to learn about institutionally, and what format you naturally are inclined toward, we'll set something up. And then I think that, you know, the other issues which really relate to board governance are, I think, best done with the board team, because you know, the major role is governance, and and what does that look like, and how do we do our business that way?
We look forward to March 15th, the AASB Spring Dinner.
15th?
Oh, 5th. 5th, yeah. Yeah, 5th, March 5th.
Are all three of you able to attend that?
Yeah. Great.
There'll be two or three of us, I think, that are going too. So.
I'm going too.
Yeah. So that'll be good.
Dan, are you going? Are you going to be available on the 5th for that IASB dinner?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay. Okay, we'll... at least a good share of us will be there, and that'll be a great orientation as well.
Good.
Okay.
Let Maureen know. She'll register you. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Great questions.
And And if anything, as you read the materials that we gave you that you have questions about, let me know too. And or contact any board member. So welcome. Thanks. Thank you, Patrick. Okay.
You want? Lead us in the pledge?
Yes. Mr. Ellis, can you lead us in the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. We've started, opened the meeting early because we had a kind of an informal board candidate orientation, so... we had started the meeting about 5:45 just to do that. So welcome, everybody. Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Bondrea?
Here.
Mrs. Howard?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. All right, welcome. Public participation. If there are members of the public that wish to speak to the board at this time, we welcome your comments. We ask again, as we've been doing the last several meetings, to limit your time to 3 minutes. And as you listen to other members of the community, if your comments have been substantially reflected, and I know that's kind of a value judgment, but we ask in the interest of time that you forego it, and please do give a copy of it to Mrs. Stecker so that she can include it, the board with any copies, and include it in the public record. Right? And Mrs. Millis, I want to thank you. I got your email right before dinner and made copies for the board so they all have a hard copy. You're welcome. Yep, you're welcome. Any public participation tonight? Yeah? Yeah, good. Yeah, you can give that to me. Probably stand, it's just easier to hear us. Thank you. Oh, you know what? Give those to Mrs. Stecker. She's in the back with the glasses on at the table. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, I'm just going to quickly introduce myself. My name is Teresa Millich, and I am speaking as a parent of an elementary school age son and a professional with over 20 years' experience in implementing large scale change. I currently work for the American Medical Association. I'd like to just start off with reading a comment that I recently saw in the patch. That said, we just moved here from out of state, and I wish we had been more informed about these drastic changes before we signed on the dotted line. Maybe choosing Glen Allen for the reported school ranking and grades is a huge financial mistake for our family. Hopefully, the community can pull together, have a voice in making the correct and most appropriate decisions for our children. We pay such high taxes for these programs, we should have a voice that is heard and considered. This comment alarmed me, especially with someone who just moved here and has already questioned what's happening. The dramatic changes being proposed without solid support from the community would suggest that the district is putting our schools and reputation at risk. I agree we need to make changes. However, we have yet to hear a solid reason as to why it needs to be so drastic and so quick, rather than the slower, more methodical approach that better ensures critical stakeholder buy-in and support and minimizes the risk of failure. This does not seem like a prudent approach for a school district that already has a reputation for having good schools. To date, we have received no actual data demonstrating that any one of the substantial changes think tank is proposing actually works, and they have not been able to point to a single school that has implemented all of the proposed changes. To many parents, this feels like an experiment with their child's education that is putting the district at risk. Additionally, I have major concerns that key stakeholders, parents and residents, would not be given an opportunity to voice their concerns about the final plan with so little time between the February 25th meeting when the proposal will be presented and March 11th when the board will be voted. That's only 2 weeks. How can the board represent the community if they don't know how the community feels about the final plan? Parents want the opportunity to process and comment on the final proposal. The current timetable does not allow for that. Although parents and community members have had opportunities, and I recently went to one that Ms. Hornacek conducted, and that was a very productive meeting, the final plan has not yet been presented. We've been told that that is going to differ from the original plan, and as you go to more meetings, you hear the changes. Since think tank's proposal, as we've seen it so far, represents a fundamental change to our children's learning process and environment, I would like to request that the board consider taking three actions. One, delay a vote by 2 weeks. And in that 2 weeks time, that would allow for parents to have an additional 2 weeks to actually process the final plan. And that's number two, is to give parents additional time. And the last one is to actually provide a forum so parents and District 41 community members' questions and concerns can be heard and given the appropriate consideration before any major change is voted on or implemented. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other members of the community to present to the board? Any other comment? All right, we have public comment. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm Stephanie Clark. I have several kids in that school district. And first, I just want to say to the board and anyone who worked on Think Tank, I know I've had some feedback of concern where we say, thanks for what you've done, but, and I just want to say, like, I know for me, it's nothing personal. I truly am just trying to represent what I think is best for my kids. And so I just want to say that. So don't take that but as trying to dismiss the work you've done. It's really just concern on behalf of parents. And I really want to reiterate that I think that there are a lot of community members that are in favor of some of the changes. Some have questions about it still. Some aren't in favor. But regardless, I think the resounding thing that I keep hearing is that there's a concern with the implementation plan and the timing. So that's just really what I want to talk to. I brought, on behalf of Y41, I brought for all the board members copies of the when people sign the petition online to delay a district-wide launch of the initiative for the fall, this coming fall, they were allowed to put a reason for signing. And I think over 60 people put a reason. Some are really long, and some are okay, some are shorter. And so if you haven't had a chance to read those, mm-hmm. I have those here for you from all different community members. And currently we have about 500 signatures on the petition between the online and the paper petition. Also quickly wanted to say at the Abe Lincoln Q&A that I went to last week, which was a good meeting, mm-hmm. there was a lot of positive feedback that came from that. I think kind of the same feeling. There are parents who are in support of the changes, and one of the questions that was asked was who is in favor of the changes, and there was a show of hands. But I know there were some people actually that raised their hands. They were sitting right next to me that said, well, I'm in favor of the changes, but I don't really support the timing and the implementation plan they have proposed so far. Why don't we ask that? And that question wasn't asked. So I just want to stress to the board that just because people do or don't support it, we need to take into account for community buy-in not only support of the actual changes themselves,
but also the timing and implementation plan, because I think it's two separate issues. And then after the final proposal was presented, I think Teresa kind of already touched on this, but I really feel that the board needs to hold some sort of a Q&A public forum where the think tank can actually answer the questions of the community kind of live, and the community can provide any input that they have at the time. So I think that's going to be a good way to understand where everyone feels with the final proposal. And last thing, this is kind of random, separate from that, but I was doing some research on STEAM online, and it seems like, and I fully support STEAM, getting technology in our schools. I think we can do even more. I know for like special ed, I wish we had like iPads for all special ed. I think there's a lot we could do with technology, but a lot of the STEAM approach is to really push it in high school and middle school as well. So I really think as a district, we not only need to be looking at our elementary schools, but get a solid plan in place for Hadley as well. And I guess I haven't, maybe there is something, I just haven't seen the details on that, but wanted to stress to get a plan for Hadley, because I know Waukesha, we faced a lot of this on, they're two schools that they do STEAM, one is a middle school and one is an elementary school. So I think we should be sure that we're encompassing all the schools in our district. That's it, thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Can you give that to Mrs. Decker, and she'll make sure that we get copies. Thank you. Thanks, Stephanie. All right, anything else? Anybody else? We have public participation at the end of the meeting as well, just to remind everybody. All right. Thank you. Thanks very much. All right. Presentations, reports, and initiative updates.
This is our Forest Glen meeting this right. evening, actually, but since we've already been hosted by Forest Glen once, and we thought that there were several reasons we were hoping that tonight we might have the meeting here. Forest Glen was gracious enough to agree to bring their presentation to us, and so Mary Hornacek, principal of Forest Glen, will lead the presentation along with some BLT members, and I'll let you get everything started. And BLT, by the way, I had that this morning at PTA Council. BLT is our building leadership team, and that is the team at the building level that is responsible for the continuous improvement plan at that building and focused on school improvement, student learning.
Good evening, everybody. I want to thank you for inviting us tonight to share with you this evening. Tonight, I have brought Jen Caracalla and Julie Nicolai, who are members of our building leadership team, and Julie co-chairs the building leadership team with me. This year, we've chosen to tell you about how we're incorporating the learner characteristics into our day. As you know, the learner characteristics were adopted by the Board of Education in 2007. And last year, our learning leadership team identified 10 learner characteristics to be our focus for this school year.
Learning characteristics are being integrated into all of our classrooms in various ways, and one of the ways is students are actually taking ownership of these learning characteristics by including them when they're setting their goals, whether it be in literacy or in math. Other learner characteristics integrated with our problem-based learning and with our grade tests. I hope you heard, your parents heard some of these. Students are given opportunities to use and identify learning characteristics while they're doing literacy analysis. During our reading and our guided reading, we're actually trying to get children to recognize some of the learning characteristics in the reading. Teachers are given direct learning instruction about our learning characteristics. And our daily announcements are very shortly. We have daily announcements every day. We're going to start incorporating the learning characteristics like 1 week, so they'll appear over and over.
In our presentation this evening, you will hear from our students about how they are using the learner characteristics in their daily routines. Our presenters represent students in grades 2 through 5, and the photos that you will see tonight capture the learner characteristics that all of our K-5 students enjoy, and everyone participated in this, so we hope you enjoy our presentation as presented by our students.
I also want to add, some of the students are still learning how to use the microphone. Are going to be louder. And I don't even think
loud is good.
And some are not very loud. So yeah, be good listeners.
Forest Glen Board of Education, February 11, 2013. Enthusiastically engaged. never learn a new technology in the school year. When we have fun at school, it feels like we're taking a break. We make learning fun. Enthusiastically engaged means staying focused on our work, being happy when we are learning, and doing our best. Collaboration. We work together in a peaceful way. I adore working with groups and meaningful. I like working with groups so I can fix my problems as I have. Collaboration means working well with other people. Use organizational skills.
Keep yourself organized so you are able to find everything. If you are messy and unorganized, you will be messy in the future too.
Oh no.
Use organizational skills means I can keep things where I can find them when I need them. Respectful to others means caring and sharing with others. Respect how others work together, grow up together, and respect how others do things.
People are capable of sharing things like iPads. We don't fight over small things.
Respectful of others means I'm always thinking about other people and looking out for them. It also means I'm respecting someone else.
I can disagree and not make a huge deal about it.
When I disagree, I am still kind. If we disagree, we work it out in a kind manner. Mediate conflict peacefully means I can disagree with someone and still be friendly. Support people's ideas and thoughts. Stick up for others and tell people what I mean. Support other people's ideas and be optimistic. Advocate for self and others means I tell my teacher what I need so I can learn. Challenge seeking. We work on improving our weaknesses. Look for hard challenges to figure out. Believe in yourself. Improve on something you can find difficult. Rely on yourself.
Challenge seeking means that many times I am looking for a challenge and I ask how I can achieve more.
Resilient in the face of challenges.
Always try harder when you fail.
Always have good spirits and never give up.
Never give up until you succeed.
Resilience means working hard until you get it right.
Bring it on.
Resilient in the face of challenges means I never give up. And always working hard, even when the work is challenging. responsibility for learning means I have good ideas and I can figure out how I learn best.
We've spent a lot of time in the last couple of years really embedding the learner characteristics. We talked about this at a board meeting beforehand, but the posters that have gone up that have been age-appropriate to our elementaries and our middle school, Hadley. So as you look at the embedding, and you as well, how has that changed the children in their learning? I mean, we can hear it and see it, but how have you seen it happen? And how has that changed the culture of the school?
Say that I see kids using those words, so you know, definitely increasing their vocabulary. They know what those words mean. They can analyze those characteristics in characters and in literature, all the way down to kindergarten and first grade. I hear them say, using the word resilience, and you know, I'm looking, speaking challenges. And you know, it's really kind of brought us together. Our learner characteristics posters are by the bathroom areas. So I see teachers doing mini lessons as their kids are getting a drink and using the bathroom, you know, reviewing those 10 learner characteristics throughout the day, just in kind of in a natural flow.
Absolutely.
I don't know, Julie or Jack, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I think it gives the kids many more goals. Besides just what's on the report card, I think these are some characteristics that we're looking, they don't automatically just have them, and we talk to the kids about that. It takes time to learn how to do and have all of these learner characteristics. So I think it's good because they are talking about it as a goal, and it's something we can work towards.
I would say even in kindergarten, you know, when you introduce these words, it's a little difficult because they really don't know what they mean. But they really grasp it easily. You know, and this is the place to start in kindergarten, and then they'll continue on into the upper grades.
Right. Yeah, I particularly like the one about relying on yourself. You know, because part of the whole 21st century learning, own it, that we've been working on is about creating accountabilities for children. If they don't understand something, to find their voice. I mean, that's what I called it with my kids. And be the one to step up and say, I don't understand it, or I need more help, or I get it and I need more. And I love that I don't know how they, you know, the language that they used it. Dan, we just saw the video. I know you could kind of hear it, but we'll make sure we get copies out too. That they are recognizing the very theme that we're trying, you know, in a broad-based way in the district to own as well. So, yeah, thanks for putting that together.
One thing I would just note for the audience is that the learner characteristics are, there are 30 of them, and they're built between skills and habits and attitudes. And so while some of the learner characteristics are skills that we would expect our students to learn and possess and own by the time they leave us, others are just lifelong learning habits of mind that we want to nurture in them and really have them become owners of their own learning. And those are really some of the more abstract yet important characteristics that you saw there, resilience being really an attitude and a habit.
And I just think they're interconnected with problem-based learning, because especially at the age I teach, they always don't think they can. And then when you, you know, ask them, well, how can we solve that problem? They can solve it. But they have to build the confidence through this program that they can.
Excellent.
Well, and a kudos to some of our graduates, because I had the opportunity to attend District 87 at Glenbard West, a celebratory breakfast this a couple weeks ago, celebrating students who, you know, were awarded a department student of the quarter. And all of the kids that were given an award, they were things like the, they were learner characteristics that these students had. They weren't about that they are in the top 10% or that they, you know, something that they've achieved, but it was really about being good people and critical thinking and helping others. And it was really interesting to hear these students, you know, seeing these things that we've been working on for all these years and watching them in action.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, well, I'll move on to the consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? All right, hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes, under Human Resources, the personnel report, and we do have an update with resignation and retirement on that, as well as an update, a correction on our monthly enrollment report for our EC pre-K numbers as well. Employment recommendations, again, resignations, resignation and retirement. Other matters including the following board meeting minutes. January 25th, 2013, a special meeting. January 25th, 2013, a special meeting in closed session. January 26th, 2013, special meeting. January 26th, 2013, special meeting in closed session. January 28th, 2013, our regular meeting. January 28th, 2013, regular meeting in closed session. January 30th, 2013, special meeting. January 30th, 2013, special meeting in closed session. January 31st, 2013, special meeting. January 31st, 2013, special meeting, closed session. And February 1st, 2013, special meeting. February 1st, 2013, special meeting, closed session. Yes, this board has spent a lot of time together lately.
And that is not something that usually occurs.
It's unusual. That's right. We have a motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Bondurant?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Glass?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. All right, superintendent's recommendations. At its January 28, 2013 meeting of the board, we discussed the following recommendations to approve. The continuation of the pre-K at-risk program. The pre-kindergarten at-risk program serves students ages 3 to 5 within District 41 who are at risk for academic failure when they reach kindergarten. The annual cost of this program is $335,550. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
I asked to answer some of you guys' questions. I asked a question this afternoon at 2:30 and actually got an answer, which is not a surprise, of Karen and of Ann. So I thought it's a little appropriate, just for my own knowledge and for everyone's knowledge, to just to ask the question again.
Sure.
And that was, if I can remember what it was, how many total students, 80 students total I asked, where's the program currently housed, and how many classrooms are currently used, and if they're used all day or half a day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And
the answers were...
Okay. Do you want us to answer? What do you want to answer?
I know it's not 80, it's like 77 kids.
Right.
And it's, you know, I'll just take a stab at it. Forest Glen and Churchill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And five classrooms all day. And... early childhood, and then that's where I bogged out a bit.
We have early childhood as a one classroom, self-contained early childhood. We have one classroom of self-contained pre-K at risk, which is our bilingual. And then the other three classrooms are a blended classroom of our early childhood students, typically developing students, and our pre-K at risk. So that's where the five classrooms come from. Mm-hmm. And three are housed at Forest Glen and one at Churchill.
And it did also help me, I think Karen answered this one, that even if the early childhood or the
mm-hmm.
pre-K didn't exist, we would still be using the classrooms because of the early childhood program, which we're required to do
by law.
And that helped me out a lot.
And 80 is the number we have held our pre-K program to. We have more than 80 students who would qualify for that program, but that dates back to when we had the grant dollars that supported 80 students, and we just have not increased or decreased that number.
Well, you said you've got 40 students per teacher, so if you're going to hire a teacher, you want some multiple of 40.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
We got two teachers, you might as well have 80 students.
Yeah. Good question. Just to frame it, yeah. Anything else? All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Glass?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrat?
Yes.
Mr. Howard?
Yes.
Ms. Nelson?
Yes. Second item is our data warehouse, which we've heard about the last couple meetings. This purchase of Skyward's data warehouse module with both installation and project management services in the amount of $23,317. This purchase will be made with a one-time payment from budgeted funds for the 2012-2013 school year. Continued annual maintenance for the data warehouse module will be $4,429. Additionally, a server will be needed to purchase to house the warehouse, and the cost for the server is $5,500. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
All right. Discussion?
Sounds as though this is long needed. And
it's just one. It's one of the most exciting purchases.
Data maven.
I'm sorry that I'm leaving.
I'm concerned about your life. Then.
I know. It is a little pathetic. It's the kind of the next step in terms of sophistication for us as we look and use data, not as as the thing, but as a resource for us to help us build the pictures of learning and build the pictures of our operation. You know, this and one of the things we've struggled with in the last couple of years, but really wanted to begin to develop, is how do we do that cost-benefit analysis in education, which is difficult at best to do, but now with the data warehouse and the marriage of our finance and our student system, we'll at least be able to try to find ways in which we can build that model. So it is very exciting. And it will free up one of our most valued talents in the district to be able to also do some other deeper work around data and learning. So we're excited on all levels.
Well, I know when we purchased Skyward 2, there was that application, that piece that I know was going to be coming down the path. So that's what this is. So that's exciting. Any other comment? All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrat?
Yes.
Ms. Howard?
Yes.
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes. Item 3, the 2013 Hadley Summer Painting Project. A Hadley Summer Painting Proposal would be the final painting project for the district schools. All four elementary schools have been painted. Each has a particular theme if you've been in the schools. And coincides with the Hadley LMC project. The estimated cost for painting Hadley is approximately $225,000. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion. Paint away.
Well, we're moving forward with bidding. That's the request here, is not
right.
To approve that.
Not to approve it, but
okay.
It's
bit
only
away.
Good.
It's
part
of the
project.
It's sounded really good.
This is just a bit.
Right.
You guys know my feeling
on
this, but I'm okay with it.
Thank you, John.
So it obviously coincides with the LLC remodel.
Correct.
Is painting covered under the standard hours or whatever? You know, can we have some wages or something for all the construction? You have to hire people.
Prevailing wage. Yes, prevailing wage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That applies to everything.
All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrat?
Yes.
Mr. Howard?
Yes.
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 Yes. Item D, approval of superintendent's contract. I'm delighted to announce that the board has selected the next superintendent for Glen Ellyn District 41. We entered the search process with a very lofty goal, finding someone who would be able to continue and to build on the outstanding service and leadership of Ann Reebok, who will retire on June 30th. Our search firm conducted a nationwide search, sifting through nearly 300 applicants and screening about 100 of those. Board members reviewed the most promising applicants and selected six candidates to interview personally. The finalists were all outstanding, and it was not an easy choice. However, there was one candidate in particular who matched the leadership profile developed from all the community input and the online surveys that we used, and staff stakeholder input as well, to a T. His name is Dr. Paul Gordon. The board is unanimous in our choice of Dr. Gordon, a dynamic, passionate educator currently serving in a large school district, a K-12, near Denver, Colorado. Dr. Gordon began his career in education as a language arts teacher and steadily took on more and more responsibility, serving as an assistant principal, a principal, and an executive director. Now, as the chief academic officer in Adams 12 five-star schools in Westminster, Colorado, he has the responsibility for a range of responsibilities, including curriculum, budgeting, and student and parent partnerships critical to the mission of the district. During the board's interviews, Dr. Gordon, we found him to be a passionate educator, knowledgeable, personable, and most important, a worthy successor to Dr. Reebok. He starts July 1st, and I know staff and community members will join the board in giving him a warm welcome. As the dates get closer, we will be planning opportunities for stakeholders to meet him. These are exciting and challenging times, both for public education and certainly for all districts, ours too. And we feel fortunate to have hired Dr. Gordon to lead us through them. So may I have a motion to approve the performance-based superintendent's contract for a period July 1st, 2013 through June 30th, 2016 between the Glen Ellyn School District 41 Board of Education and Dr. Paul Gordon, and to authorize the board president and secretary to execute the contract in the form presented by the board president and signed today by Dr. Gordon.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion.
We're really, 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 really excited about this gentleman. The board spent a great deal of time over several weeks and replacing Ann, who in our mind is irreplaceable. We really believe unanimously that Dr. Gordon will be an asset to this district. His love of learning it just comes through. His support of staff and initiatives and leadership was second to none. We were really lucky because the final three candidates were all very good choices, but the board was a very easy decision for us.
Very
exciting. Yeah, I think we got a great candidate. I think we were lucky. I think this is his first serious look at becoming a superintendent. Mm-hmm. His wife wanted to move back to the Midwest. So we're kind of lucky that this was the first district he seriously looked at, and you know, we got him. So I'm looking forward to him coming out here. I also want to thank our lawyer for the district who spent the last two weekends a lot of time put in Friday, Saturday, Sundays, getting this done very quickly. Mm-hmm. Everything that goes along with negotiating the contract and helping him along. So Todd Faulkner wanted to thank him too.
And Maureen Stecker.
I'm
sorry I forgot to thank Maureen, because Maureen really helped keep us on track throughout this process that was quite a daunting task at times. So thank you.
Very excited. Great fit for the district, and really good, again, unanimity among the board in terms of that next leader for the district. So we'll be getting information out to everybody and letting you know when we'll be doing some meets and greets. Dr. Gordon, as well as the other two candidates that we interviewed, did have a chance to meet with the cabinet, and we provided some time for them to have some face time. Also gave them a tour of the district with a couple of board members so that they could see the properties and get a feel for that, although most of them had kind of Google mapped the district and kind of knew what they were looking at. Very good. I want to thank all of our board members and for all the time and effort everybody put into this. And thank you. All right. Roll call, please.
Mr. Glass?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenworth?
Yes.
Mr. Vondrack?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson? Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right. Superintendent's report.
Well, I'll make it brief. I do want to let members of the community and board know that we are nearing some, you know, we've heard a lot about Think Tank and the deadlines around Think Tank, and so that work, which is tied to our long-range plan and building a 21st century learning organization. I just really want to make a couple other connect-the-dot pieces on that because all of that is connected to our long-range plan. And the approval of the data warehouse is another piece of that to help move the organization into a 21st century learning organization where we have greater synergy among all of our operations. It's going to allow us greater efficiency, greater use of the resources we do have, and that combined with our long-range technology plan are updates that I'll be providing the board even later this evening. But that is one update, and of course tied to that is the renewal of the master facilities plan that we've been working on, and we hope to bring a report to the board early April on where our next steps for the Master Facilities Plan will be, which is to take the work of the 2009 Master Facilities Steering Committee looking at the long-range view for our facilities to move them not only into a permanent structure, but also to make them 21st century learning organizations. And we plan to unveil that plan as we've tweaked it and updated it to align not only with the work of 21st century learning, but also 21st century facilities. So those are a couple dots to connect for us.
Yep. Lots going on. Thank you. Okay, board reports. Sam?
Do you want to do policy now? Is it a discussion item, or should do it now?
No. Well, you could do just the
update.
The
update, yeah.
Okay. Policy committee met on February 5th to finalize the updates for Section 3 of the policy manual, as well as other policies and procedures updated through the press service provided by the Illinois Association of School Boards. Mm-hmm. Policies that have been updated or revised are listed in the table provided in board book with corresponding remarks and comments, and you guys have all seen those remarks and comments in the packet for this meeting. Current D41 policies not listed in the table remain unchanged, so if there's any policies that in Section 3 that are not there, obviously they're still in existence and have not been updated or changed. Questions or comments at this point, or should we discuss it later?
Yeah.
Okay. Final reading of these revisions, additions will be at the February 25th meeting. Mm-hmm. The policy committee will then begin review of Section 8 at the next Section 1, excuse me. at our next meeting, and hopefully have those revisions done by the end of.
We hope.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it for policy.
Thank you, Sam. Anything for finance?
We did not have a finance meeting tonight. Mm-hmm. I can talk about PEP. We had a PEP meeting.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell people what PEP is?
PEP is the charitable arm or the 501(c) entity for this district and the other feeder districts along with the high school district. So it is I'm trying to remember.
It's a common organization for all the districts. They keep their money separate, but they only need one audit and one, it's just a little more efficient way of having that organization.
And it's actually PEP's been around for 21 years. So.
Yeah.
21 years. Hopefully that answers the question. Mm-hmm. We met on this past Wednesday. The organization is going to have to do another full audit because of the lights
project
that was in at the high school. So it doesn't materially affect us, other than I'm just reporting that. The one takeaway for us is they just wanted to make sure that we're going to continue with the check the box program. So, and that was kind of a question for Julie, and just to make sure that we're online to do that with the next year with the enrollments.
Good.
So,
we do. Is that good? Other reports?
We had learning leadership team this past week, and at LLT we talked about the transition from learning leadership team to Team 21 and how some of the curriculum committees are going to slightly change in the makeup of that committee. We also had a presentation. Katie gave a presentation again about the two foreign language programs that the board approved, and we started talking about just sort of brainstorming where is this 30 minutes going to come from, and it was a really great discussion because it, for me, again, it highlighted the different needs of each building. And as different buildings were talking about, you know, throwing out their suggestions, it was, you know, a gasp from one school saying, you know, oh, we couldn't take it from here or there because of the programming within the school. And within that discussion, targeted learning time came up. And what was interesting was we heard a lot of comments brought to us that there's no targeted learning time in our buildings. And we had several teachers put a end to that discussion rather quickly, that it actually does occur in each of our buildings. And I don't know if Karen wants to kind of explain what it looks like, because I think the confusion is it maybe doesn't look the way that it did when it first began in our buildings. And so the misconception is that it's not occurring because students aren't exactly moving a classroom in every building the way they perhaps did in the beginning, but that what was interesting actually at Lincoln School, the first grade teacher that's on the committee commented that her kids move often to other classrooms. So I think that misconception that targeted learning is not occurring in our buildings is incorrect. Mary, you're nodding your head in agreement that targeted learning is going on at Forest Glen on a daily basis, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So I just wanted, because it came, you know, that's been a board interest about targeted learning time and our misunderstanding, you know, what we thought it was and that it was occurring. And I know many of us have been asked that question recently about what it looks like in our buildings. And so, again, while it may not look the way it did initially, it is going on a daily basis in our buildings. And finally, talking about learner characteristics, a subcommittee is going to start finalizing the next steps for the last group so that LLT can move forward with some other projects that they're working on.
Great. Other reports?
I attended both the Lincoln and Churchill think tank discussions.
Mm-hmm.
Very good discussions. I think someone commented that it was very helpful instead of a big presentation. So for those that haven't attended those, seems like the crowd enjoyed them and it was a good dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more school-centric, I found, too.
Yeah, and had a lot of, you know, there were a panel of teachers that were there, too, that helped answer questions.
Yeah, good stuff. We had PTA Council this morning. I mentioned that earlier. The PTA Council is the group of it's a leadership organization for the district that has all the presidents of PTA. You don't need another meeting, Mary, and their rep, as well as the chairs in PTA Council, along with an executive board. And there were a couple things I just want to highlight on. For those of us who have children at Glenbard West, we already got an expedite call, and Ann had already put this in our e-news as well, around the Five Essentials, which is a school climate survey that's coming out. For District 41, this Illinois climate survey is for grades 6 and up, meaning 6 through 12. So unlike our climate survey for District 41, we won't be using it in the elementary grades. But every single parent is invited to go on the fiveessentials.org, or just Google it and it'll come up to you. Illinois Five Essentials, you can take the survey. So all parents, regardless of the year that your children are in, can take the survey. And that'll be children grades 6 and above. And there'll be some more information that Julie will do a much better job at describing than I can about how the data will be aggregated, disaggregated, et cetera. We do need, however, a minimum of 30%, is that correct, of our parents to take the survey in order for the district to get its own report. So if it's less than 30%, and our school climate has been in the high 20s, our survey low 20s, so we really need to pump up the volume if we want to have
that as an individual report. So we encourage people to do that. The Reflections Program, which is a PTA-sponsored program, was quite exciting this year for District 41. We had children from most of our schools submit, and the numbers went like this. We had 86 children from District 41 submit. That's K through 8. 59 of those reflections, either music, art, literature, you know, any kind of activity around that, 59 went to the district level. Out of that for District 41, 31 went to regional, and 7 of our students went to state, which is a real, just a great reflection, no pun intended, on the district. And then we had, there's a new category called the special artist category, and one of our Hadley students went to state with that. So it was very exciting for the district. We have 2 co-chairs who are just on fire with reflections, which is really exciting. And so they've got lots of good ideas for next year to kind of pump up the volume on that as well. And the 2013 reflection theme is Believe, Dream, Inspire. So I'm sure there'll be a ton of great stuff around that. 2 other quick things. I just need to share really quickly. Churchill School, which had just started doing this, had a father-daughter dance this year, and their numbers were astounding, so I just have to say them out loud for the record. 350 dads and daughters went to this dance. Not sure where they put them. But they had a blast on the website. We all get the e-news from all the different schools. It's just great pictures. And then in lieu of that successful event, there's a mother-son extreme trampoline dodgeball event. Which I think is going to be a riot. So I just thought that was a great takeaway. At Forest Glen, they had 200 families come out for their DJ's 80s night dance. And many of our schools do what they call a cultural lunch. Ben Franklin, does Lincoln do a cultural lunch? I'm trying to think if he did that.
A couple last year,
right? And then Forest Glen did one as well this year. So just very good stuff. And I share all that in part because, you know, we want to recognize that the schools are doing a lot of parent engagement and involvement, which is absolutely critical to, I think, kids feeling affiliated to their schools and a part of things. But there's also a lot of governance that goes on at the PTA level that I think, for me, in watching it grow, has at a much higher level now than it ever was before. So I just want to give kudos to our PTA Council Board and all the work that goes on, and just great work of PTA presidents like we have represented here tonight. So thank you.
If I might add, Lincoln will be celebrating its 50th anniversary on Abe's birthday on the 12th, that's tomorrow, and has a full day of activities planned, and it will be a very, very exciting day. And
I'm coming over.
Are
you dressing as
Abe? I'll be helping the afternoon, Mrs. Basile's afternoon kindergartners decorate their door if anybody wants to come.
Excellent. Excellent. I have another kudo to share, and I know the board's already seen this, but the Illinois Association of School Business Officials Award of Excellence in Financial Reporting, our district has received again. So kudos to Bob Cicerella and Phyllis and your team. This is not an easy award to receive, and we've been doing it consistently for the past 7 years.
Probably longer than that.
Yeah. So congratulations. And one last thing that's more at a national level that I think is important for people to know. There was a letter that went out. The school boards are a part of the Illinois Association of School Boards, IASB, and then the National School Board Association, NSBA. And a letter went out to 4 of our federal legislators from the National Governance Association, the Council of State Governance, the National League of Cities, the International City County Managers Association, National School Boards, Conference of State Legislators, Counties, Mayors, and National Association of State Boards of Education with regard to the reauthorization of the ESEA Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which is on hold right now, which is essentially No Child Left Behind, requesting a review and wanting there to be some changes made in the legislation. So as you read about it, we're all parents here, many of us community members. You know, you are welcome to write your legislators and encourage that reauthorization because it's put a bit of a stranglehold on some of what we want to do, so I want to share that and remind people that we are much bigger than our local district and impacted certainly by all that. So that's it. All right. Discussion items.
Our first discussion this evening is the Hadley Junior High LMC remodeling project. And as you know, this has been a lengthy discussion that began at Finance and Facilities. We have gone through that process three times to give permission to go out to bid for the Hadley project. And now it's been through Finance and being presented here for discussion for the bid results and hopefully eventually your approval. Bob has some renderings of the Hadley remodeling project, and he'll be able to walk you through that. You have seen, board members, other renderings that I think gives you a more comprehensive view of what the LMC is going to look like. And so these are really just highlights. One thing I would just note is it doesn't highlight maybe some of the nooks and corners that we've described as being the more intimate learning spaces, but this gives you an overview. And Bob's going to walk you through each of those and then entertain questions.
So hopefully everybody can see this. Everybody fairly familiar with what Hadley looks like. Folks been over there. This is what the entrance to the library will look like if you were to walk down the past the front offices as you approach that sort of center hallway. Is you either go left or right. This will be the new entranceway of the Hadley Library. It'll be moved from its present location, which is a little further east. You notice there's a soffit with some special lighting that'll accent the area along with some floor design. It'll be encased with glass doors. Over here is a look of what we've showed you previously with regards to the that's a demonstration room. I'll be seating in there for about 30 kids. The teachers will go to work with a classroom a classroom of kids. Back here in this area, this is our technology areas. There'll be two labs back there. And so that's what the front, as you enter the library, will look like. And then I'll, this here would actually be once you, you're in the library and you're standing back a little bit, actually maybe towards the courtyard area, looking westward in terms of what this demonstration area look like. Here is the interior where the circulation desk will be located. Again, there'll be a soffit with some special lighting and a circular circulation desk where kids come and check out their books and so forth. And so this is the foldable nano glass wall that will be in there to give the area some privacy, but will also be open and will increase the flexibility and use of the space. Because we also envision it not only as a library, but a professional development area for the district. And it looks like everything doesn't look like, but everything is portable in there. And we believe we'll be able to get 225 to 240 seats in there for some district-wide professional development. If you'll note up here in the ceiling, you know, you have the standard type of ceilings that we have in all of our buildings now with this type of ceiling tile and grid. This will be a plank effect where these planks are six to eight feet across, and then it will be opened up into the exposing ductwork and things of that nature, but all be cleaned up and painted. Very appropriate for that space. This is the type of carpet tiles that will be going in there. And this really doesn't give you a lot of showing you the different types of seating arrangements that we have. This is the type of furniture that will be going sort of in the center, but there are also different types of seating in this demonstration room here. There'll be standard size desk, and then it'll also be what we call a high-boy type of chair, so kids will be able to, there'll be two different levels of seating in that area there. There'll also be several different types of seating throughout the space. We have some bench type of seating. We have seating that's actually recessed in the walls. We have some slingback chairs that the kids will be able to sit in. We have some perfect shot in the hallway, as a matter of fact, that we resemble what we'll be putting in there. We'll be having, there'll be 12 or 14 different types of these chairs on wheels that will have sort of like a tablet. We envision kids being able to use for if they have a laptop or if they have their iPads or something along those lines, that they'll be able to move around. Again, this is to build them flexibility, being able to accommodate different needs for different kids at different times. So again, this is what it will look like if you were actually standing like back towards the courtyard and looking west. And then finally here, this is the area here that will be more or less as you're coming in the front door area. And we'll be looking back, here's the courtyard out here in this area here. What you don't see, or you see very little of really, are the tech lamps that will be back here. There will be two of those. One is for IT, and the other is for kids to create different types of projects in there. Mike, I believe that's all going to be Mac equipment in those labs. And then behind these areas here, there are three small group meeting spaces for kids to use, teachers and kids to use. Those will house anywhere from six to ten kids, and different types of seating in there, basically used for small group instructional space, learning space, project-based areas. Again, a little bit different look in terms of what the carpeting will look like, the ceiling will be designed, the soffit and the circulation desk, different types of furniture. I don't think this really gives a real thorough demonstration in terms of the different types of furniture that we have going in there, but believe me, there's, I don't care, maybe six or eight different types of seating and tables and desks and things of that nature that will be going in there. Karen and I spent a lot of time with the architects trying to determine what that space is going to look like. Just wanted to reiterate, we probably started this project a year ago, Karen, in March of last year. We worked through the spring, into the summer, and then again in the fall. We went out to bid in the late fall. Bids were due back after the first of the year, and that's included in your board report here. I can answer any questions or give you a talk if you'd like me to. Mm-hmm. Any questions on the way that the design looks like now?
How different, if at all, is it from that original plan that we got?
That's, well, it looks like maybe some of the seating arrangements
have changed. Okay.
But those seating arrangements are all flexible seating arrangements.
Right.
So essentially, these labs have gone side by side instead of back to back.
That's what it looks
everything
like.
Everything will come out of here. We designed everything for maximum flexibility. So all the chairs will come out, all the tables will come out. This space will essentially just open up into a large meeting area. If that's what the district needs for professional development in any particular occasion, there will be. Mike, we talked about some technology in here. Back along these window areas, there'll be two large screens that will drop down. It'll be completely wired for audio and visual, much differently than we currently have. Any questions?
Bob, so
comments?
My question is, so assuming that if it is approved and we move forward, they're going to school's over on, June 1, June 1st, and they're starting?
June 2nd.
June 2nd, and we'll have it done?
Substantial completion is the first week of August.
Okay.
We may go, a little bit, we may have to start a little bit earlier, we may go a little bit longer. This is a very challenging project, and that's one of the reasons that we've had, as I explained in your board report here, we had a low bidder come in. The architects and I met with the low bidder. Gave them, we laid out the program for them in terms of what our expectations were and how they were to manage this project. And that's, I think, one of the reasons that they withdrew their bids. I just don't think they were the firm capable of producing the kind of work that we need done here.
Did I hear you say they withdrew their bid?
Yes, they did. They withdrew it in the past week or so.
Okay.
They actually did withdraw. So
Dan has a question.
Yes, Dan.
I just wanted, you had sent out the spreadsheet to me and a couple of the other finance people showing, what I like to look at is the all-in cost.
Uh-huh.
So can you recap that for the rest of the board?
I don't have it here in front of me, Dan.
Is this on our board report, the project description, estimated or known cost?
No, it's different. I can read it if you want.
Sure.
Go ahead.
And so we have the construction cost, which you see listed there. If you did all the alternates, which was $1,124,000.
Right.
Then also, Bob, you had mentioned furniture and other equipment be put in for around $150,000.
Correct.
And then you also just mentioned some of the technology.
Right.
That goes in, not only the audio-visual stuff, but it sounded like there was maybe some new computers and some iPads that would be added for another $150,000. And then the last item was just the professional fees with a budgeted line of $100,000 for an all-in cost of, is right around $1.5 million.
That's correct.
Okay.
Bob, talk a little bit about, because I know that we discussed this before, but these dollars being built into our capital projects.
Well, as you know, we've developed a long-term capital projects list. It goes out 10, 15, 20 years, and it takes into account a number of things. The obvious things are parking lots, roofs, just the normal things that it cost us really to maintain our buildings. In a good operating order. And in addition to that, we have technology, we have music equipment, we have everything. It's a fully inclusive plan. And one of the areas that we've determined a number of years ago was to redesign the Hadley LMC. And as a matter of fact, we have all of our LMCs at one time or another scheduled for redevelopment, replacement over the next several years.
Mm-hmm.
Just as we talk about implementing STEM over the next several years, we're talking about implementing STEM, but addressing some physical needs of our buildings for full implementation.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't get that accomplished this year just because we ran out of time. To go from planning to construction, I need 15, 18 months. Of time to be able to work through the process that we have in the district to bring all the various stakeholder groups together, hear their comments, and then go back with the architects and design what we actually need. So it's not something that I can just do in 4 or 6 months. I really need a year or longer to be able to do a full implementation.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a spreadsheet with literally hundreds of different types of identified projects. Concrete replacement, as I said, windows, roofs, literally everything you can think of that it would cost to operate a business is what's incorporated in this plan.
And some of the big pieces of that are that, as Bob said, one strand is capital work that needs to be done to keep our infrastructure and our buildings operational and in good order so that they're decent learning environments. Another strand is to take some of the short-term recommendations of the Master Facilities Plan that we could do in lieu of a major building project, but still get some work that moves our facilities along and keeps them modernizing, and this is one of those kinds of projects that's tied to the Master Facilities Plan. And then the third is the Age and Obsolescence Group, which Bob also referenced as being replacing trucks, replacing equipment, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really three big strands that and Bob analyzes every year for prioritization and what moves to the top, and we try to allocate about $1.5 million annually for that kind of infrastructure.
When we had that master facility group together back in 2009, we had focus groups for each one of our buildings. And those folks brought together a number of recommendations that I still have downstairs and are in our spreadsheet, and that we annually go back and review and reprioritize to see if we can actually implement. And one of a prime example is we heard the comments from several years ago about the Hadley parking lot, the approach, the water retention, and all those different things that we were able to accomplish this past summer with the redevelopment of the Hadley parking area.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just a number of issues. You know, another one that we hear all the time is really Churchill and how would we deal with that building and its approach and parking and things of that nature. So
mm-hmm.
those are just the comments or the suggestions that have come to us over a number of years that we track and we just annually review to see if, in terms of implementation.
So the lowest bidder pulled out.
Lowest bidder pulled out. As I said, we had a couple of meetings with them. We pressed them on time issues and also their ability for performance and some bonding requirements that they were having some difficulty fulfilling. So they eventually did withdraw. They gave us some indications that they were a little bit hesitant. Finally, they did withdraw. That's when we went back and we spoke with HAP Cap Construction, and they have agreed that they can perform all the qualifications that we set forth in the bid documents. They can meet all the bonding requirements, and they are in agreement with working with the very constricted timeline that we have to complete this project. We really have about 8 to 10 weeks from start to finish to get this thing done. Mm-hmm.
So that was part of my question. So the initial little bit effectively with the bid, so the process and just automatically goes to the next lowest bid?
That's correct.
Now,
I spoke with the attorneys, and in our bid documents, it says it's at the board's discretion mm-hmm. to select the lowest, most competent, or the competent bidder. So that's pretty... That's pretty critical there. Every year when I bring you capital project recommendations, there's a thorough vetting process that we go through. There's bonding requirements, insurance requirements, can they meet the timelines, the reference checks, all those different things we need to talk through with. Really, we go to the top three contractors, and then we do the background checks and check their insurance and so forth. And that's the process that we go through. So by the time I bring you a recommendation, we're pretty solid in that this is the most competent contractor to be able to perform the work that we need done. And one of the biggest, you know, one of the things that everyone needs to remember, Ann only gives me about 8 weeks to do the work in these buildings because our buildings are in increasing demand throughout the year and even over the summer. So I only get a short period of time to get in there, do our construction projects, get all the B&G department in there, and you know we clean our buildings from top to bottom, floor to ceiling, wall to wall, completely. It's $500,000 worth of buildings to clean in a very short period of time. So we have that going on, construction projects, and any number of other things that are going on.
Mm-hmm. So it also sounded as if the architects were not going to recommend the most.
No, and I was going back and forth. You know, whether we were, and I had conversations with Ann, you know, I expressed my concern, but, you know, if we were going to really press them, well, I'd be willing to work with this contractor. But when they pulled their bid out, that kind of sealed the deal right there. Mm-hmm. We had to go with the next lowest contractor because these guys just weren't, I don't feel as though they were capable of doing the work.
And I think you just said it, but TAP?
Cap Construction.
And they're willing to do the work and they're ready to go timetable when things
are. Said they're ready to go. We received their assurances.
Strong references.
Yeah. And they've had other projects similar to those, correct?
Yes, they did. And that's the key is finding a qualified contractor that has done similar type of work. And that's one of the things that are stated in the contract. You are in our bid documents. You have to do X number of projects within the past 5 years of a similar nature. They've done this, what I consider very select interior demolition work and reconstruction. Like I said, that space is going to come down from floor to ceiling, from wall to wall. It'll be completely empty, and then we start rebuilding. So there's some significant work to occur there in a very short period of time.
I was more concerned with, you know, they didn't get this bid, so maybe they moved on to other projects, but that's not the case, and we're not worried about them being spread too thin.
No, not at all, because it was only a couple of weeks in there, and I'm sure they continue to bid projects as they ordinarily would, but we've met with them, we've received their assurances that they're ready to go on this project. They were a little angry when they first didn't get it, because they thought they gave us the best price for the work, but, you know, seeing this initial contractor that won clearly wasn't qualified, and probably it's best that we just...
So you're going to bring this back on the 25th?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm not sure who said it, but from a budget perspective, this is our capital budget. This our capital budget program this year are over our budget.
Mm-hmm. Over what we have ordinarily budgeted, and a little later this evening you're going to have a conversation on fund balance.
That's why you're asking for the... Mm-hmm. Recommendation three or whatever discussion three. So
right. This
is not part of our budget. I mean, we could do this project within our budget, but with everything we have planned, we are going over budget on this line item for capital projects.
That's correct.
If we stick with our current allotment, you know, we're making another recommendation. If we chose to say we won't do X, Y, and Z this year and increase our capital projects by another $500,000.
When we budgeted, we're
building our budget now, so we'll probably stay with the 1.5 and then ask.
Yeah, it's more than just maintenance, though. I mean, a lot of the yearly budget is really maintenance type stuff. This
correct.
Is actually upgraded.
Capital improvements.
Jerome can attest that current library was the same way in the mid-70s. It has not changed in 40 years. So
is that your library, Steve?
Yeah, Andrew.
Andrew's
the... It unchanged.
There was another flag added recently.
That's right.
But, I mean, spending a little bit to update it, I think, is fine. It'll still last another 20, 30 years. But I think it's worth a little more than just maintenance.
Right, and you know, you ask a good question, like I'm bringing you a recommendation, or you've seen a recommendation for painting. Our buildings hadn't been painted since, they tell me, around 1997 was the last time, 15, 17 years ago. You know, you talk about normal maintenance. To me, that's just sort of normal maintenance, although it comes out of my capital budget. It is still maintenance. It needs to be done every so often.
This is a capital improvement project as opposed to a capital maintenance project.
And
it's really aligned with our long-range plan and our master facilities.
John made me think of another question. The STEM equipment purchases, what type of equipment are we talking about?
Are you talking about the next furniture bid, or are you talking
the
about...
The one that's on here.
Under other information, that's really related to... You know how we try to offer... this is one of Dan's suggestions in our board reports, to what other expenditures should we be taking in consideration. And so Bob included the other capital projects that we're looking for the summer, which would include STEM lab furniture.
Which is not...
Not part of the Hadley. It's just another cost in terms of our overall capital project.
I wondered the same thing.
And I do want to say that even though it's not directly related here, we will be looking at STEM and that sort of thing at the junior high as the new curriculum is developed for science. And Karen has already been in contact and conversations with all of the science teachers at Hadley and in making that move. So it's a seamless move between junior high and elementary.
Thank you, Bob.
Hey, I just have one more thing.
Wait, Bob.
Okay. Sure. Go ahead, Dan.
Go ahead, Dan.
Glad you got in there, right?
I have no doubt that if this goes through, you know, the 40-year-old facility will be upgraded and it'll certainly look a lot nicer. What I struggle with is, you know, what is going to be the measurable improvement in student performance? How will their learning be enhanced by what level? I really struggle with this one. In the past, I've been pushing for more science labs, more science equipment buildings. That's why, you know, I've voted against the courtyard and the parking lot. And so I really struggle with this one, especially now that I see, you know, we've taken the $800,000 STEM labs off the table for this year. So, I mean, I don't know if anyone else feels the same way, but this one really kind of hurts, just because I've been pushing for so many years for us to get that in, and going to be leaving the board without that. So that's why I really struggle with this library. I have no doubt it needs it. It needs to be updated. But, you know, I guess I see other things as a higher priority.
You know what, Dan? It's funny because I actually asked myself the same question. Like, how do you measure what's going to come out of that room? And I thought back to the courtyard where we had a lot of discussion. And when you talk to the teachers and you talk to the kids who are at Hadley, that courtyard is utilized across the board. It's not just science. It's you know, other departments that are using that courtyard to do different things. And I look at it as a way of getting back to our 21st century learning and those principles that we've supported about critical thinking, you know, analytical skills, different opportunities and flexible space. I mean, you, were you on, I can't, I'm sorry, Dan, I can't remember, were you on the building? No, okay. But I mean, in terms of our building report, you know, that was one of the big things that kept coming out were flexible spaces. And this actually allows us flexible spaces because the way Hadley is structured now, there are no flexible spaces. I mean, they're little boxes of classrooms. pardon me?
Pods.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I forgot about that one.
Which are not classrooms.
Which aren't really classrooms. They are an auditorium that has been switched to give us some space. So, this is flexible spaces within the building. I don't know how you... I agree. I don't know how you can measure it, but I guess at the end of the day, we measure things by assessments, and whether they are in class assessments, are the kids learning the skills that they're being taught, and these are opportunities to do that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I guess if I look at it from the perspective of, what if you imagine if instead of spending this $1.5 million on the library, we spent it on upgrading our science labs? We've only talked about $800,000, but if you did a what if, how much more exciting we could make things and turn OAS into a science excellence center for our elementary students. That's one of the things I would kind of look
and
at.
And Dan, I don't think I doubt any of us would disagree with you, but I think the unfortunate piece of it is, again, I look at it from a priority standpoint. Hadley is a building that is used by every child at some point within this district, so Hadley building spaces do become a priority. And in terms of a science lab, until the science curriculum is finished, why would we want, I look at it as, do we build forward or do we build backward? Do we get our curriculum and decide what we need and the best use of those spaces, or do we build a space and then hope that the curriculum we're going to need fits that space?
Well, I think it comes down to priority. I said this the last time this came up, right? Is that the guy said something to the effect of, I think we have $12 million and $12.5 million of capital projects coming along, right, which essentially don't include things like, land acquisition or STEM labs or some of the portables or whatever, things that we say are a priority. And, love this. I think it's great. We definitely want to do it. You and I went to Lake Forest, right? Remember
right.
that facility Maybe. They had? It was great. So I think what we said, or at least what I said in the last meeting, is trying to understand how we're going to embed this into the curriculum,
mm-hmm.
right? So we need some points around how that's embedded in the curriculum. We did that a little bit with the courtyard. But it comes down to priorities. We don't, at some point we're not going to have the money to do all these things. And like Dan, I'd much prefer putting some step in. And if that means we have to wait a year, which you guys know I would not want to do, but if we have to wait a year, at least we know the money's there and we can get it done. And maybe we can do a little facelift here with more of the furniture and a couple other things, to improve it. But it all comes to priority and the dollars we have, that's all. So I don't feel we have to do something this summer because we have to do something because we have to wait another 18 months to do something else. It's all where these dollars come from, which is part of the discussion coming up, I think, too.
I think there's a missing piece that you just brought up, and I myself have done a little investigating with teachers that were on the committee. Bob mentioned this, and I always think it's really important because we get a report that's pretty static, but what we don't see is the underneath of it, which is all the conversation that's gone on behind this. And Bob brought this up a minute ago, and that was all the stakeholders, teachers, staff, parents who were involved in these conversations, and why they identified, as we look at, this one snapshot of the plan, the kind of things they want to build in, including the computer labs and the kind of technology that's going to get embedded into everything, language arts, science, mathematics, technology, that those are going to be used, I'm sure, nonstop. Certainly Mr. T's lab downstairs is used nonstop. When it gets moved upstairs, it'll be embedded further in terms of the curriculum. And I think... So I think what would be helpful, Bob, is if we could have some verbatim, some understanding of how the teachers and parents and staff were involved in the initial conversations, how you brainstormed too, so it could be this, which is what we're seeing, what they felt the curriculum needs were. Cause I know that the language arts teachers I talked to who were involved with this talked very much about the quiet reading space, the ability to cluster the movable furniture, the demonstration area that can get closed off. They were very much about the importance of that from a learning standpoint in terms of bringing more classes together, having larger teams. So a lot of, you know, what Tara, you mentioned earlier about collaboration. So that was helpful for me to go to the sources. I think that will be helpful for us to see in the next couple weeks so we can have some of that. And I don't know that these projects are mutually exclusive either. You know, I think that, you know, we're going to hear in another discussion in just a second about our fund balance requirements and percentages and some options, you know, that Bob and Ann are presenting. So, you know, bottom line for me is let's hear what some of those measurable requirements are in terms of why they designed the way they designed it and how they came up with it. And that, to Tara's point, this is the one school that all of our children flow through. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a classroom space. This is not just a library. It's a library. It's a media center. It's classroom space. It's collaboration space. It's individual learning. I mean, it's all those things put together. And so I'm trying to think about this as holistically as possible and the kind of options that that can provide. So I think that would be helpful.
Clarify something. I didn't, you know, when I was saying the $1.5 million, I wasn't saying put it at one school. I was saying use that instead of the $800,000 at all elementary schools.
Right.
Instead, increase it and use it at all elementary schools, which all of our children do attend. So just want to clarify.
Dan, I knew that's what you meant. I knew you meant to put a lab in other building.
Well, and I just would offer a clarification as well in terms of form follows function and putting STEM labs into our elementary buildings, full-blown STEM labs prior to having a STEM curriculum adopted, might be limiting our plan, as we described it before, prior to Think Tank going back to the drawing board on some things, would have required some minor construction within the buildings, within the existing buildings that we have, not addressing any of the limitations of those buildings for actually housing STEM labs. And in order to, for the kind of STEM labs we might envision, and what I loved what you were saying, Dan, about that, is really tied to the master facility plan and a much larger building project where we would be adding a significant square footage in order to create those labs. And so this project is really built around the principles of the learner characteristics, that the LMC in each of our buildings is the hub for learning, and that it is a place where projects come to fruition, is a place where students from a variety of environments come to collaborate and learn together, and where projects can be presented. So it's not exclusive of STEM activities, though it wouldn't be a STEM lab. So in other words, you may have a STEM activity that does not require a science lab, but still can be a science lab that is focused on engineering principles. And so I think seeing this space as a place where those kinds of things can happen, in addition to other kinds of interrelated arts for performance or for collaborative work. So they're both concepts are built on 21st century learning principles. I think the learning center, the way it's the principles behind that is really much more embedded in the learner characteristics than it is a particular content, and looking at fostering those critical thinking skills, fostering some of those habits of mind.
See, I think you could say that about, I mean, those learning characteristics are supposed to be in everything. It's not just in the LMC. It's supposed to be in the STEM labs, the classroom,
of course
literacy,
they are.
History. You could say that we're building this before we understand how we're going to use it in the curriculum. It just goes to priority. That's all. Mm-hmm. If the cost of a STEM lab in every building is that much, where's this money going to come from? If we do this and then we have all this maintenance stuff we have to do, it's just priority.
Mm-hmm. So this is the first discussion.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be more.
There'll be one more. I mean, if you're prepared to vote.
I would encourage, we always do this, right? Mm-hmm. When, if Bob, you can get us some of that information from some of the brainstorming and that, I think that'll be helpful for me at least. And let's not wait till the, you know, 2 days before our board meeting. Let's get those questions back to Bob and Ann. And
was that the what was the activity that FGM did over the last 3 months of last year? $80,000 expenditure. Was that this and STEM, or what was that?
I'm not exactly sure what the nature of your question is, but I think the answer is yes, it was both. We did the LMC, and then earlier this fall, we built, in collaboration with our buildings and the Think Tank subgroup on facilities, what we might be able to do if we could identify a space in the buildings for STEM labs, but we're clearly not at a point where we can move forward with that. And it would require the sacrifice of classrooms and use the STEM lab as a shared classroom and a lab. Does that make sense, Dan?
Yep. I'm just not sure what you want to do next. I mean, do you want to just vote no on this, wait till the STEM labs are ready? Do you want the administration to go out and try to get a bunch of bids to build STEM labs now this summer? What do you want to do?
There's not time to do that, though.
So.
What we've said is that based on the recommendations that come from the buildings on implementation of the recommendations of the think tank, we have asked each building to identify an area where they would be able to house a STEM lab if they can, maybe two if they can, and that we would use those in the short term, and rather than do construction, we would build, you know, we would do it with furniture, and we would do it with smaller scale projects, which you'll see in the next recommendation, which is to take our furniture out to bid, which includes, you know, minor equipment to create the environment of a STEM experience without the full blown lab, which, you know, as of right now, our vision for the STEM lab for elementary schools does not include like Bunsen burners and that sort of thing. It really will be focused on the project-based approach and engineering principles rather than so not a full lab, like a science lab where you might see gas and, you know, those kinds of things, but rather
I guess my mindset, Steve, is two things. One, understand, you know, we have a better understanding of this $12.5 million maintenance and capital improvements that are being proposed over the next 5 years. We should have a discussion as a board around land acquisition, STEM lab, and whatever else it is we think we're doing to determine what the priorities are. For me, it's about priorities. I mean, I would change the mindset of we have to use the space in the building now to put a STEM lab. I mean, we put, what, three classrooms on in Hadley for $1 million? Is that what that was, those three classrooms?
The special education classrooms?
Yeah.
That was also with the AARA grant.
Yes. It was funded, but it was $1 million. That was the cost of it.
Not to the district.
No, but it was $1 million project. Mm-hmm. Right? It didn't cost less than that, but it cost $1 million to do that. Mm-hmm. So if I had $1 million, you know, could I add something like that to Churchill or
I would just say then we have to go back to the master facilities plan and say, is it a plan that we support, or are we just going to add pieces here and there and not have a master facility plan?
Well, I don't think that adding a piece here and there for a STEM lab is not a master facility plan.
Well, it depends on where your plan ultimately is going to go, whether those spaces are created and then are they maintained in a building plan. But, I mean, they'd have to be designed so that they are already a part of a larger plan.
I don't think we should say the assumption is that a master facilities plan is not a master facilities plan if we put an extra room on a building.
No, but how does it fit into the master facilities?
It needs to align to, you know, curriculum drives building. You know, what we want to do with curriculum then drives how we build that. That's been our, you know, kind of our guiding principle about this stuff too. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you, John, that these things are important.
If you want to follow the principle, give us the curriculum behind us, which is what I asked.
But yeah, I just at this point, it's like we're ready to, we've got bids, we've got all the work that's been done. I mean, what are we going to do besides you can justify, well, I'm going to vote no because I'd rather spend it somewhere else. That's fine.
Well, Steve, you're forgetting what has changed. Since this was last presented late last year, we had Media Center, we had $800,000 in STEM lab. Now we're coming forward and seeing that we're pushing that off because of, you know, the curriculum not being defined. So I think it is very appropriate to have this conversation.
No, I agree with you, Dan. It's not inappropriate to be talking about this.
And Dan, I don't think that's what Steve is saying. But I think it's just the point of people are kind of, you know, feeling comfortable, yay or nay, shall we say, on where their position on this, and just if you're not, if what are the alternatives if you're not in support of this project? Mm-hmm. So I don't think anybody's saying not to have that discussion. Mm-hmm. And you're right, some of it, the look of it has changed, and the proposal has changed over time, which is a good thing if that means, you know, taking into consideration different aspects of a project that, you know, it's going to morph.
Mm-hmm. So, John, you just said you want, like I just said too, let's look at some of the curriculum based around this that teachers and staff has identified.
How we implement this in our curriculum, that's the principle. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
How can we articulate that, demonstrate the value of that? Mm-hmm. I don't care about dollars and cents, ISAC stuff. How does it, you know, how do we really think that's going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe, at least in the anecdotal conversations I've had, that there's good, I'll use the term science behind it. But I think that's really valuable for the board to have.
So my perspective, just to maybe put a period on it, is I don't think any of us thinks that the LLC is a bad idea. I think we're struggling with priorities. Is that probably accurate?
No.
And to that vein, with the facilities we have now, if we want to go down the STEM road, it's more a give and take. If we want to put a STEM lab somewhere, we're going to have to take something out of it. So a classroom, you have to make one classroom or two classrooms into one classroom. Higher class sizes, more space concerns, more issues. Where I think maybe we can, in the interim, sort of integrate the STEM curriculum with the existing facilities that we have. Maybe that's a question that we need to answer as well, but I think that...
Well, that's the question we have answered, I think. You know, we've tried to answer each time we talked, and because we're in a state of limbo right now with our proposal, the most likely answer to next year's STEM lab is something that is temporary and within the construct of what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that may end up being a favorable disposition.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that, how we don't want to do something that becomes permanent in the face of a less, you know, the curriculum that's not known completely, right? We're getting that. So we have had that conversation, and we have talked about land acquisition, too. I mean, these are not mutually exclusive conversations. This board has talked about all these things kind of in and out with the basis of the Bachelor Facility Plan, which we spent a year plus with a number of community members, 75-plus community members, giving tons of time. And that's been our platform, the Master Facility Plan.
Well,
so
I respect what both John and Dan are saying in terms of priorities, and I think what we've tried to present to you is this is the priority that we're bringing to you for this year, expending and looking at it as it aligns with our Master Facilities Plan and what we are able to do within the resources we have and without immediacy to a referendum to do the larger projects that we would obviously like to do to renovate our buildings.
Yeah. It'll be helpful to get the departmental view of it, too. Good. Thank you, Bob. So, classroom furniture.
This is a request for bid. We do that annually, and the request is for a variety of pieces. One is the Hadley LMC. Another is the 21st century classrooms, for which we want to equip 24 more classrooms, and then the STEM purchase for equipment that would go into rooms designated as kind of science lab rooms for next year at the elementary buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Did I miss anything? Because my board book went to sleep, so I just signed back in. I don't have my... Did I catch them all, Bob?
32 classrooms.
Oh, sorry, 32 classrooms. Yeah.
So how close are we to...
We would finish the year after.
Mm-hmm. There was a comment at the Lincoln meeting the other night, I think. Let's see, Dan, I'm sure you heard it. John, you might have been there at that point, too, where a parent talked about the fact that her daughter is in a classroom with 21st century learning furniture, and that it was, important to her that next year as she moves, you know, up a grade, you know, does that mean she'll lose that aspect of it? And it was just interesting that that's become kind of an embedded feature now in many of the schools, and that students are enjoying it, parents are enjoying it, so I'm glad we're able to keep rolling this out.
Mm-hmm. And this is, of course, a request to go out to bid.
Right.
We bring back our best bid to you for those collection of furniture.
Okay. Any questions?
And the next item is the item that I think John was alluding to earlier, and just by way of background, we have a board administrative procedure that directs us as an administration when our fund balances exceed 25% of total operating expenses that we must bring a plan to you what to do with the additional resources. And we've had several conversations around this at finance meeting, I believe, and in larger board meetings. And all of those have been really in the kind of high level. Here are all the things. There are many, many things that, as John, I think you've mentioned, that we could make a request to you for use of those 5% excess, and I don't want to call them excess, but above the 25%, including leave it as it is. What we're bringing back to you is a dual recommendation, one which is to use the additional fund balance some of that fund balance to bring us to $2 million in capital projects for this year, to attach a couple million dollars to roofing repairs that are needed throughout the district, and we would identify, we've already identified where they would be, and we'd offer you that priority. And then $3 million to be set aside. We'd actually keep it in the fund balance. We wouldn't put it in a separate fund for the purchase of land on which to build a new school. And that's basically our recommendation.
I guess just my initial reaction to this was, I don't know if this is the way the policy is set up, but so we're asking, you know, $500,000 for the library, you know, $1.5 million for roofs and other projects. Are we at a point where that $1.5 million doesn't make sense? Because the $1.5 million that we budget for capital projects now, right? We normally budget between $1.5 million, right? So, I mean, sounds like over the next 5 years, we're going to exceed that. So should we change that line item to say that we really need $2 to $3 million, you know, as opposed to, I understand you're saying here's how we would use it.
Right.
But, you know, is that a better approach to say our budget number should change? It's been $1.5 million for the past 10 years. It now needs to go.
And we have changed it over the years. I mean, we've gone down to as low as 900,000 one year, I believe, 1.2 million, and as high as 1.6, I think. But that's a possibility, which we could always examine. And for this $500,000 that we're putting in there as one possibility, we certainly could do that. But as we've looked at the roofs, you know, in the roofing project, we've shared that with you over the course of the next many years, that we could do exactly as you said, which would reduce expenditures in other departments and other locations. But we think,
you know, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying you reduce in other departments. I'm saying you make this a part of your budget moving forward.
And you could, but in the sense that if it's not within the resources that we anticipate having, then we would have to make adjustments elsewhere in the budget. So in other words, you know, we're going to have $40 million in our budget, and we give you a plan for $40 million, but if we want to spend $2 million on capital projects and $1.5 million, given the balanced budget, we would need to bring that $500,000 from somewhere else, unless we could find it within the increased revenues for that year.
I guess I'm struggling with, we spend between $1 million and $1.5
million
on capital projects. We know in the next 5 years we need to spend more.
Well, it depends on the frequency of the things you're doing. If you change your roof by once every 20 years, and there's other things you've got to be $1.5 million that are recurring every 4 or 5 years. I mean, here he has a plan.
Right, but part of the roof.
And John, I'm sorry. I'm not disagreeing with your approach, and that may be an approach that you would direct us to do instead of using the fund balance for that. That's we're recommending using fund balance for it in order to maintain the $1.5 million as kind of our baseline for capital projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, this question came up when Bob presented, and you gave us those color photos of all the roofs, remember? Mm-hmm. In my backpack. And that you gave us this number, but it's not static, because there are some roofing, the way the roofs are laid out, there are some portions that, there's only a portion at each of the schools that need to absolutely get done, another portion that could get put off. So part of it, that you know, makes sense to me is that what you present us every year with Age and Obsolescence but Capital Projects also is that based on your review at the time, some things might shift. So the 12.5, which is the number in our report too, is also fluid to the extent that it may or may not be needed at a particular time, that number in 1 to 5 years, or it could be more. But that's why you update this for us.
Well, and that's why we looked at a 2-year recommendation for the fund balance above the 8% that's above 25%.
So if we thought we were going to need to spend a ton of more money in technology over the next 5 years, and over the past 10 years we only budgeted $100,000 for it,
we've adjusted our budget.
We adjust the budget.
They do it, right.
Seems to me it makes sense at this point that we adjust the budget, but yes.
Well, Bob is going to do that. I mean, you're suggesting something that I think is already being done, that those assessments are done when Bob starts to build the budget now, you know, as we move into next year, right? I mean, that's always my assumption. Every budget I've looked at, it gets adjusted. So
I think what we're doing here is we're saying we have a fund balance, where would we spend it?
Exactly. And we ask the administration to come back and say
a budget that is going to go up over the next 5 years, so let's start with the budgeting that way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a different approach.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Completely different. Mm-hmm.
Right. But I just want to reinforce that any adjustments.
Things that need to be done
when they need to be done, right.
Are we superfluously trying to spend money because it's there? I don't think so.
No.
Which is why I say budget. I'm not saying that we're doing it. I'm saying just budget.
Okay, and what we're looking, our recommendation is for a $5 million commitment or attribution to something, some projects, and this is what we've brought you. And of course, the board need not do anything. Could say that the level of our fund balance is okay, and we don't just keep it as it is, and you don't need to do anything and provide us with a plan. As you see, I mean, for us, the larger chunk of money there is for land acquisition, mm-hmm. which we think is a good expenditure for any fund balance above 25%.
It's been part of our discussion, so I think the board agreed that we need to do a set aside for that. That's important money for the district in general. So. I did have one question to Bob when we got this, and that was about our security needs. And thank you for getting back with me last week. So, my question was, are there any long-range, actually to John's point, are there any long-range capital things that you see coming down the pipe that we should be doing some set-aside that we might use with the fund balance? So Bob's response was we're exploring all of our security needs in this month, next several months, and that the recommendation will be to increase your budget to $75,000 because currently we do 30.
I have been budgeting $35,000.
Right. Okay. So that was my only question about are there some other things that we know are kind of prescient right now? So he's already building that in. All right.
Any other questions for us on that? Okay, next item for discussion is board policy, which Sam Woo-hoo. Gave you an update on, and this is a first read of a combination of two types of policies. One, a section review, which we do annually. We work through those each section, try to get through, well, we'd like to get through two a year. We usually get through one because they do take a lot of time, and the board committee, which is Erica and Sam, and were assisted by Maureen, again, invaluable assistance from Maureen. And so Section 3 is been completely revised or at least reviewed. As Sam said earlier, some of the policies have not been revised. They've simply been reviewed, and so that they will be marked as such. And others, we have some revisions, which we've described for you in the comments section. The second group of policies are updates, and we receive, as a result of belonging to PRESS, which is part of an IASB, Illinois Association of School Boards, product that provides us legal updates to our policies on a regular basis, a quarterly basis, and we receive those and look at them in light of our current policies. They're not aligned to any one particular section. And so this is almost a full year, I think, of press updates. So one of our goals as a policy committee is to improve our, do a little better job of getting our press updates done on that quarterly basis. But this is the first read. There's nothing terribly significant or huge changes that we would probably talk about, except perhaps in...
I have to apologize, but I think our favorite press update is about the service animals in schools, which would include both dogs but also
monkeys.
No, miniature ponies.
Miniature ponies, which is new mandate. So we all
that is a mandate.
Thought that was very interesting.
And if you've seen a miniature pony, they're darling, but I fear they might be a major distraction to learning. So, pardon me. Sorry, Dan.
What'd you say, Dan?
Said, did Tara make a funny?
Yes, she did. She said, what, monkeys? He said, no, miniature ponies. So if you don't think policy is interesting and fun, it is.
But anyway, these are not what we would consider any major, major revisions. Most of them updating. We often update with press just to make sure that we update so that when we get another press update, we're not terribly behind with that, and we just change some of the language. So any questions on those should be directed to Erica, Sam, or me. And then we'll turn to Maureen.
Thank you.
Okay.
Upcoming meetings, February 25th, 2013, regular meeting, 7:30 p.m. here at the Central Services Office. Are there any other matters to be considered by the board at this time?
If I could raise just a special meeting request, and we would like to have a special meeting on the 17th, which I sent everyone an invitation for, in order to review and take action on the proposed teacher's contract.
19th.
I'm sorry,
19th?
Yeah. That's the 17th. This is Saturday.
I'm like into Sunday. Am I
no. Well, we'll come.
We can do that. I have three tentatives. And one person, I think, Drew, did you give me a response on that night?
I almost thought you would have to call in.
You'd have to call in?
If it's an evening meeting.
And that's my question. I mean, with three tentatives, we'd have we'd have a physical quorum, but if you call in, John, you were a tentative.
What date was that again?
That's Tuesday after President's Day.
The 19th?
Mm-hmm.
That's 5 days after my birthday, like you said.
We'll keep that in mind.
No large case.
Is this March 19th?
February. No, it's February.
February?
Yeah, I was a yes.
You were a yes.
A week and a day.
Yeah, everybody was
day.
All yeses and three. It was three yeses, yes? Three tentatives, yeah. And one no response.
So,
did you do a yes?
Are you good? Are you good?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have four. So we have a physical call.
Earlier, I could go to a yes. I mean, if we could be done by 6:30.
We could start at 6. We can do it in the morning if you want.
Starting at 6:30.
We could move it to 6. We could move it to 5:30.
Well, 6 wouldn't work for me.
6 won't work for you?
You're talking the morning?
Well, I was talking the evening.
I've actually participated.
But we
in
have
a
done
a
we've done a 7 a.m. meeting here. If I guess my point is, if it's not Tuesday,
how long is the meeting?
Well, it really shouldn't be a lengthy meeting. It's to review and take action. We should be able to be out of here in a half hour.
Yeah. No, I'm out of town, but I just don't know what my schedule is in the morning.
You sent it out initially as an easy meeting. Sometimes we start messing with days and times, and then we lose it. So
John, are you thinking you can call in? At 6:30?
Well, I'm looking at my calendar. I think you say I was tentative.
You were tentative, yeah.
I think 7 o'clock would work for me. That could move me to a yes.
Do we have a physical quorum?
We have a physical quorum with 1, 2, 3, 4. And we have 5 calling. I just would like everybody to be able to participate.
Yeah. So, Dan, you would need to be done by 6:30, though, it said. You said.
Oh, is that what he said?
Mm-hmm.
Is there another morning or so that we could do instead?
Alright, so you guys are saying 6 to 6:30.
Well, that worked for me.
Okay. Well, 6 to 6:30 would be ideal for Dan.
He's leaving. We don't want to do that.
We need 7.
We need 7. Are you calling in, John? Is this a call-in for you?
He said he thought he could be here if it was later.
I think I can be here. So.
Commit. Just okay. Commit. Good
okay, so we have everybody here then except Steve. Can you call in at 6 most likely?
Most likely.
Okay, does that work for you, Dan? 6 o'clock?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, thanks. Great. We'll post a meeting. For anyone who's interested, we're going to post a meeting, a special meeting of the board at 6 o'clock on the 19th, and I will send out new invitations.
I was going to say, good morning, send out new
ones. From 6:30 to 6. 6. From 6:30 to 6.
So
6
to
7
instead of
6:30
to 7.
6 to 6:30. Well, we'll try. Well, I'll send it as an hour. I will send it as an hour, Sam, which is what I sent the other one.
What time is it?
6 to 6.
In closed session, there's a discussion, and then a pretty quick public vote.
Public vote would be a very quick vote.
But there's no discussion, really, in public or
no.
Anything like that.
No,
it's not just a special meeting for the public to really learn anything.
No.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I'm sorry to do that kind of housekeeping, but I just thought if we didn't do it here, I wasn't going to be able to get you all.
Good.
19th. Okay, that's it.
We have to adjourn to closed session. The board is determined. Oh, I'm sorry. Public participation. I'm sorry. Altogether. Any final? Yes, thank you, Sue. Oh, good.
As always.
Joy did the hit.
A while ago, a section of Hadley, LMC was dedicated to Hadley math teacher Charlene Novelli. And do you want to keep going?
Okay.
And we would just like to ensure that in the redoing of the library that at some point that would be considered.
That there's an area.
There's a big artwork, piece of artwork that students and teachers created in Charlene's memory, and there's a picture of her with some teachers, and there's also a sign that's suspended from the ceiling that currently is the Novelli lab, one of our computer labs, and we would hate to have that disappear with the renovation of the library.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, anybody else? Okay.
I sent an email to you about the select board meeting. One of my many concerns over the think tank is transitions, which I think has been echoed many times. I don't know where the time is coming from in terms of instructional time, or if there's been any consideration for lengthening the school day. If there's a significant amount of time being taken out for transitions, where is the time going and where is it coming back to? I just didn't know if there's any consideration from the think tank about lengthening the school day.
That's not an area for think tank to be, because that is under collective bargaining, labor law, that would be something that think tank really can't make a recommendation about directly. But let me just answer an issue of transition. The transition time would be at lunchtime, just as there's a transition time now at lunch. So that's really your transition in the current proposal that was shared. The transition from your morning to your afternoon would happen at the lunch hour.
And that's the only transition.
Unless it's a transition like they currently do during the day, where students go to band, orchestra, special services.
PE.
I'm sorry?
PE.
Those kinds of things.
Target learning time.
That's our, my understanding is there's no transition time, additional transition time. That's what I heard at the last.
Yeah, period. That big transition is happening at lunch. So students are moving from one section, their literacy section to the STEM section, or vice versa. Okay.
And also with that, Teresa, you're still there, and Stephanie has a lead, but I think the public does need some comments once the final model is presented.
There will be public participation as we have at every meeting.
Yeah.
In addition to.
I think we've provided public comment at each step of the way, and there'll be public comment at those meetings as well.
But in between,
You mean a public forum, another public forum?
Something like a public forum where there can be more input.
Okay, thank you.
It's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. Some parents might say, hey, this is great for correspond, but Churchill might say, well, this isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. There needs to be something in between.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Yep.
Do you have a green form?
I did want to follow up and ask when the teacher survey results will be shared with the public. I wanted to get, I did not hear that as far as if there will be a community survey done. And I guess, as a parent of a third grader, I think in many respects that boils down to, I think we all have a shared goal of wanting our kids to succeed. Yes, we all have a shared goal of, having cutting edge opportunities. My rudimentary research on just looking at STEM, it's been called STEM, STEM. That alone, in talking to consultants and again, very rudimentary research, is showing that's a big change. And that's looking at, it's not just curriculum, it's also looking at a whole new way of teaching. It's more hands-on. And I have to say, I'm excited about it. I know my third grader, he's just done with a science experiment, and I think he would be very excited about that as well. What I haven't seen as much, and I think in the meeting over at Correspond, we had a great opportunity. I really do appreciate the work, the think tank information sessions, the sessions over at Forest Glen. And we had a small group here, but there were still a ton of questions. I even had one of the think tank members come up afterwards and say, gosh, those are great questions. You should be on think tank. These are really good questions, can you hand these over? And what I haven't seen with implementation or something like that, is not necessarily one that goes on in the teacher specialization, that goes hand in hand with Bannon, so combining grade levels. And I haven't seen that that you need to do all those things along with that. And so the question is, why would we have so many what I would consider to be fundamental changes? Overlapping, and again, back to what I was saying before, that we really don't have any evidence of a school who's done all these huge changes to say that this is what works.
Thank you.
So, I think it's very important, and I want to build on what you said, Erica, as far as what we need to look at faith and belief and how important that collective faith and belief is. And how important I think it is that the parents and the community feel that same level of awareness and comfort with changes in the youth.
Thank you for your comments. Yeah. We will have the think tank recommendation proposal at our next meeting, and I can assure you that everything that you've said, that you've written, that has been put in emails, has been filtered through, and there's been incredible due diligence to look at all of that. I can assure you of that. So thank you. All right, the board has a need to go into closed session to discuss the following matters. Collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employer against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity, the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the district, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired. I have a motion to adjourn to closed session.
So moved.
Bless you.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrack? Yes. Mr. Howard?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, the board anticipates taking action on an employment matter when it does return to open session. Thank you. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Okay, return to open session at 11:15. Action item on employment. May I have a motion to approve the resolution authorizing notice to remedy of a tenured teacher named earlier in the closed session?
Motion.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Kenwood.
Yes.
Mr. Van Brock.
Yes.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Mr. Slack.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mrs. Howard. Yes. Mrs. Nelson.
Yes. May I have a motion to adjourn the February 11, 2013 Board of Education meeting?
Motion.
Motion.
Stop. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Dan.